again from Stain, reclaiming the number one spot after being knocked off a week ago. That's it for us. Find out more about Tony Iommi's book, Iron Man, at iommi.com.
Get our entire chart plus our six picks at thesideshowcountdown.com.
I'm Nikki Sixx.
I'm Carrie Kasem.
And we'll see you next weekend.
The Sideshow is now over. Go ahead, stick a golden fork in it. We're done.
Here Detroit News Lions beat writer Bob Wojcicki talking everything Honolulu Blue and Silver. Brought to you by St. Joseph Mercy Health System.
Discover Remarkable at stjoeshealth.org.
Catch Wojo Monday and Friday mornings with Drew and Mike exclusively on 101 WRIF.
Hey, you, Detroit.
The Riff.
Now.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Welcome to WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan. Peter and Julene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Julene.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everybody. Hi, Julene.
Peter, hello.
Another crazy week.
Woo!
And we're here to take your calls and talk all about it.
Yes, we are.
313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
And hey, if you're just listening for the first time, what's going on? I thought this was a rock station.
Yes, it's
well,
still is. 2 hours a week.
Yeah. We rock, we talk.
Yes, we do. But we're going to have some music tonight.
We are. The incomparable David Rovics.
Yes.
And you can go to his website. He's going to be on at 11:30 calling in from Occupy Portland.
Yeah.
Where the is coming down.
Yeah. Well, the people won last night. And let's just we'll get an update from him. And he has a brand new song called Occupy Wall Street. We're going to stay right here.
Yeah.
And we're going to play that. We're going to debut it on this show.
Now, if there is a few of you who may have not caught wind of all of this, thousands of cities and other locations around the world have had these occupations, these encampments, where people are challenging the power of money to rule all of our lives, and not the 1% that are able to determine the fate and future of the 99% of us.
I would be shocked if people hadn't heard 99%, 1%, or Occupy anything, because
yeah,
it is everywhere.
Well, I think they've even begun to use it sort of in gags. And
oh, they
all
are.
That.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So, but what it's now coming down to, unfortunately, in the popular media, but understandably so, is these what they always call clashes with the police. And generally, it's the police trying to move out people out of their encampments, out of public spaces, out of the public square. And I just don't get it. I mean, do these people really that are running things, that are running Oakland and running mm-hmm. Denver and running New York and the rest of these mm-hmm. cities, Chicago, do they really want a repeat of the 1960s in its worst aspects?
Well, clearly they do.
Yeah, I mean, there are wonderful aspects of the 1960s that really framed our consciousness and our customs and styles and all that.
Sorry, I was just thinking.
You're just thinking drugs and sex. I'm talking about other stuff.
I know, but there was a lot of that going on.
I know.
Now that guy who took me to task for being flippant about sex is going to come after me
again.
Yeah,
you're right. Last week. But, we should. Oh, we did tell people that. 313-298-WRIF. You didn't do your end of it.
I did do it. Yes,
you did?
I did. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But, you just hear it so much. It's 313-298. Wait. 313-298-9743. I heard another talk show host talking about the fact that now that there are cellular telephones, a lot of them don't have the numbers coordinating with the letters.
They don't even have letters on.
Yeah.
They don't even have letters on.
Or Or there, it's a keyboard without the numbers. You know, the numbers are separated from the letters. So I was onto something.
You were? If you'd like to email us, and sometimes, particularly if they're short little messages about what we're talking about, we'll read them on the air. If they're longer ones, and sometimes people really pour their hearts out, it's incredible. And
sure.
I got to tell you, sometimes people will write like 300-400 words and in an email. That's a long email, and it takes you a long time. And I write back, thanks for sharing your thoughts with me. I appreciate you listening.
Yeah.
And I get the feeling sometimes that people will think, well, no, they think I'm just blowing them off or I didn't really read it. I really do read them all. And, and I can't give long substantive answers.
Yeah. I mean, you put enough to make it feel like you really did read it, in my opinion.
If I, well, so yeah, sometimes I send you blind carbon copies, BCCs. Mm-hmm. But if I write you back and say, you know, thank you for your interest and I appreciate what you've said, that's sincere. I have read it.
Yeah.
We also have a Facebook page, facebook.com/nightcall, and we've been saying friends one. Well, you're our friends, for sure. You're our radio friends, but you have to click like because it's not a friend page.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean,
it's a friendly page.
It's a friendly page.
For the most part.
Yeah. Did you post on it today?
I did.
Well, that's good. I didn't even look at it. Oh. Yeah. And Athena and Sarah are putting together our podcast as we speak. It'll be up at noon today. We've been having some technical problems, but I think we have them solved. And thanks to Jade and Eric for that. They are very helpful. So. Okay, so you wanted to talk about
Rick Perry?
Rick Perry.
You know, I was talking to one of my political friends the other day, and the first thing I said was, did you see, and he says, yes, I did. I didn't even have to say what it was. Well, Rick Perry, who's the governor of Texas, running for the Republican presidential nomination, when he was here in Michigan, they were here for a debate last week, and he had a little issue where he just completely blanked out to the point where the first time I heard it, I didn't even see it. You know, it would have been more visual and upsetting had I seen it and heard it. This guy, it was so sad. What you doing, Peter?
Yeah, I'm trying to find my mouse.
Oh, you are? Oh,
I got it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to need that for sure.
Well, you know, I don't know what the big deal is about it. You know, we call it what? A brain fart.
Yeah, but he couldn't, you know.
Tell people what it was. Maybe we can get it up here if I can figure out.
Well, that would be great if you could, yeah. He was trying to name the three governmental agencies. I pulled it up for you already, Peter.
I know, but I got to get the screen up.
Oh, okay.
Just keep talking.
Okay. He was trying to explain the three governmental agencies that he would get rid of.
Yeah.
If he were president, and he could only remember two of them, and it was absolutely just the most uncomfortable thing I've watched in a very, very long time.
Well,
and you know what? I don't care. I mean, we do have brain farts. We have them here, but we're not running for president of the United States. And if you can't remember a major governmental organization that you're going to shut down, get the hell out of here.
Oh, you scared me for a second. Yeah, well.
You found it.
Yeah, I did, but it's 2 minutes and 13 seconds long.
Just.
I want to. All right, let me see. We have.
Let's just play it.
Okay.
Because I think it's at the beginning.
All right, we will.
Let's try it.
All right, let's see.
Listen, there is a reason that Caterpillar moved their hydraulic manufacturing and their engine manufacturing to the state of Texas. It didn't have anything Americans are looking for.
Okay, keep going.
We're getting all tangled up around.
Oh, no, I picked the wrong one.
My flat tax is the only one.
Oh, here it is. Okay.
Okay, so what's the third one there?
Okay. Yeah.
And I will tell you, it's three agencies of government I get there that are gone. Commerce, education, and the, what's the third one there? Let's see.
Five.
Okay. So, commerce, education, and
EPA?
EPA. There you go. No.
Environmental Protection Agency, yeah.
Seriously? No, but that wasn't the one he meant.
Is EPA the one you were talking about? Or?
No, sir. We were talking about the agencies of government. EPA needs to be rebuilt.
But
there's no doubt about
that.
But
you can't name the third one?
The third agency of government, yeah. I would do away with the education, commerce.
Are they helping him?
And let's see. I can't. The third one, I can't. Sorry. Oops.
Oops. That was his big oops moment.
That was his big. I'm not as impressed. I mean,
well, what's to be impressed about? I mean, I know you mean you're not as, you don't think it's as funny as everyone else.
The worst thing about him is the man's politics, that this Republican primary is a freak show. And
oh, it's great fun, though.
Well, you know what? People are really watching because they're just looking for the oops moment. And there was Rick Perry doing the major oops to the point where that may have sunk his candidacy.
Well, but then what happened after that is he went all over Letterman, all over the place. And people started to like him again. It's turned, his little appearances have turned Well, of course, the people who were changed.
He's supported by 4% of Republicans, which translates probably into 2% of Americans.
And then there's that point. You had to go and say that.
Now, David Rovics, by the way, did I say that you can go to davidrovics.com? It's R-O-V-I-C-S.
You didn't say that. But
and David is going to be telling us about Occupy Portland, where in one of these stupid decisions on the part of the Oakland administration sent Oregon, that they sent in these RoboCop, just full body armor, you know, face masks and what have you. Again, confronting young people wearing shorts and flip-flops.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. The other thing David's going to talk about is the fact that he has played over 20 Occupy protests around the country and Canada. So maybe we can get a gauge on some of his experiences.
Well, what, you know, when I saw the videos, and in fact, we just saw one on the news as we were preparing for the show, that this anger wells up in me. Here is this faceless robot with this huge stick slamming it into people that are wanting to do something really terrible, stay where they are and not hurt anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I watched the live feed in Portland last night, part of it anyway, and their whole message was about nonviolence. Their whole message was about nonviolence.
The Occupy people.
Yeah. But then there would be some guys who come in there and take the open mic, and we're like, we've got barricades down here, we're going to do barricades down here. And these people are like, no. This, you know, they were kind of, it was a little conflicting. I felt sorry for them.
Well, again, as I said last week, the police didn't decide to send themselves there. And the police didn't decide to armor themselves like that. These are all orders. And we're not in a period where the police are going to mutiny and say, hey, look, those are our fellow citizens. They're carrying out First Amendment rights to peacefully assemble for redress of grievances.
Yes.
And don't you know we have grievances? And that's what it's all about. It's not about, their sanitation conditions or whether or not they got to leave at 10 a.m. It's about the banksters. It's about an economic system that works best for 1% and a few people down, maybe 25, 30% of the American population, maybe 8% of the world, 10% of the world, and what have you. There's enough wealth in the world that nobody has to suffer. I mean, in this country, we think about suffering as having to do with losing our homes. And this is suffering, losing our job, losing our home, medical care not available.
One in five children goes to bed hungry.
In the United States. Yeah. Then you move on to Africa. Then you move on to Latin America.
Uh-oh.
Then you move on to Asia. And the worst that anyone is suffering here is, I mean, I don't want to diminish what people are suffering here. But the world, I mean, the same dynamics, the same equation of 1% and 99% really hit home there. I mean, at least up here, you know, if you're in the top 30 or 40%, you can live a fairly decent life. I mean, there, it's 1% and 99%, period. And it doesn't have to be. We accept poverty as a condition of life, like it's inalterable, like it just, like rainstorms what have you.
It's also highly invisible to a lot of people. Some people, it's not even a blip on their radar.
You know, but whenever, if you see some Indian city or some African city and you see this incredible poverty, the needle doesn't bounce too high because we're used to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See those Christian Children Fund videos to send your monthly donation to save a child, right?
But in any event, it's not about, although these are important issues, not about physical occupation. It's not about whatever you may or may not think of the individuals that are portrayed, and that's very important, portrayed on television as representing the Occupy movements, although most of the representation is fairly good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's been some unfortunate incidents.
There's been some scary incidents.
Yeah, and one of the things, I saw the Portland police chief, Portland, Oregon. And he was saying, they're saying, why did you have the movie? He said, sanitation conditions were terrible. They had bottles of urine. I'm saying, so you sent in this heavily armored, militarized police force because people who were not provided with, and the city could have done this, it would have been a lot less expensive to provide some porta-johns, because what's happening is people are peeing in bottles because they're in this encampment. They can't leave. A lot of times they're surrounded by the police, and then they're going to dispose of it later. That's not the best. That's not the best thing to do.
At least they're just not peeing all over the park.
Yeah, and then they, well, they always claim people are, and to the extent that anyone is. And by the way, this is not unusual. Defecating in public and what have you is not unusual among the homeless.
Right.
And the homeless have been heavily attracted to these encampments because, gee, they provide, contrary to what you, foods and fairly safe location.
Yep.
And, medical care and, what have you. And all the city needed to do was maybe get 10 porta-johns. And it's a lot less than all the overtimes, a lot less than everything else, all the war equipment that they have for war upon citizens. Every time you see one of these scenes with a militarized police force, there goes some of your tax money that's absolutely unnecessary. I mean, most cops are pretty big and strong, and they would do, you know, pretty well, if they were barehanded, you know?
Right, exactly.
Against.
Bam, there
yeah,
you go.
Yeah, yeah. And also, the vast majority of these, people that are in the Occupy movement or in any protest movement aren't about fighting the police. It's not what their object is. I mean, they had, I just talked to a friend of mine, you know, Danny from,
sure.
from San Francisco. He was coming home on the BART, the Bay Area Rapid Transit, the night of the Oakland, California general strike.
Oh.
Where we were told that there was perhaps 7,000 to 10,000 people that shut down the port of Oakland because of what the police had done the week before and, in fact, injured that Vietnam vet by shooting a projectile at him. That's right. Citizens are out there. Let's lob some grenades at them.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, they're not explosive grenades, but enough to severely hurt this young man who had survived two tours of Iraq and had to come back to Oakland, California to get a hit in the head with a tear gas canister mm-hmm. shot by an Oakland police officer. Anyway,
he was just released from the hospital.
Yeah,
he had a fractured skull.
Yeah, skull.
Skull, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. And Danny said that he estimates, you ready for this? He estimated there was 50,000 people there.
Really?
He said they couldn't have shut it down with 10,000 people.
Huh.
Yeah.
Wow.
So what is happening here, people? And don't get diverted by the talk of curfews or hygiene or even violence. Now, that's important. And one of the ways that the police could help would be on the periphery to do what they usually do, to monitor situations, to not let them get out of hand, unless, like the New York police, you want things to get out of hand. One of the things that the New York police have been doing, they've been telling and in some cases driving homeless people to Occupy Wall Street and say, hey, you can get a free meal here and medical care and what have you. Yeah, yeah, they've been able to.
Well, that just makes zero sense to me.
Well, the New York police are such a heavily politicized police force. They're so corrupt. They're so brutal that they ought to be in receivership or what are they for a federal. Super, you know, they have these court orders. Actually, I don't know why I can't think of it. Hey, there's three things, and I can't think of the third thing.
Right? The best.
Yeah. And actually, I have a whole file, which I don't want to get into right now, about the New York police and what, you know, what they've done recently and what have you. I mean, it's truly, truly frightening. But listen, I don't want to go all bad news. In fact, I don't even know if this is bad news. We are confronting the power of money for the first time in a century. We've really been at it for protests for all this time. Unionization to some extent was, because what people said in the 1930s through the 1950s is, hey, we are working class people, but we have the right to have a middle class living. Because you, the rich people, the 1%, earn so much money, it can be shared. And what the union movement did was provide a redistribution of income, not just for union members, but for all working people, because what they did was to raise the standard. They demanded a minimum wage. They set the standard for health and retirement. And what's happening now, the 1%, see, you think, oh, they say, okay, we give up. We'll let you have your unions, and we'll give you, you know, some good things and let you move to the suburbs and all that. But They never forgot, and they want this all back because they want everything. You know, they're not happy controlling this vast fortune among a very few number of people in this country. It's pathological. It's beyond greed. I don't even know how to characterize it.
Yeah.
I mean, because greed is you want everything. Well, they already have everything. I mean, you can't have more than everything, and they have more than everything. So they wind up with billions and billions and billions. But, in fact, I should do that. In fact, while I'm doing our little song, our little logo.
Oh, no,
I'm giving it away. Wrong one. Oh, no. There you go. That stroke is out of the palace into the ditch, as I always say. We don't go that far.
You know, people have been thinking we're nuts for saying that all these years, or you, but
yeah.
I mean, I'm with you. But now it's a kind of a common saying, and people always catch up to us. I'm telling you.
They've been eating us for years. That's how they got their wealth. And I did say this on the air last week, didn't I, when I was interviewing people at the first Occupy Detroit march,
yeah.
And this young woman had a sign saying, eat the rich, and I said, what does that mean? And she said, which word don't you understand?
Oh,
yeah, I did.
That was awesome, yeah.
Yeah, I did say that last week.
Fabulous.
I went, okay.
she told you.
By the way, I hope things don't get out of hand here in Detroit, because the city has said that Occupy Detroit has to leave Grand Circus Park by midnight tomorrow, Monday.
Yeah.
And the police have had, as it even said on the news we were watching just a little while ago, have had excellent relations with the occupiers. They've helped out there. They've provided a few things and what have you. All right, but eat the rich. Let's get back to eat the rich. So here we have this situation where, here's what I'm thinking. The city we live in, let's keep this as a benchmark. Its budget, which has dropped significantly from 22, we live in a small suburb, from 20, you're wondering why we won't tell you. Well, we won't.
We won't tell you.
We won't tell you. From 22 million, if you really did some research, you might be able to figure out from this figures.
Peter?
from 22
even,
million down
just
to 18 million.
Just say it's a lot.
I want to see who can do this.
No.
Okay. Well, it's too late. Cat's out of
Peter.
The bag. All right. Well, so the budget for our city is about 18 million. There's a lot of cities with 18 million.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So here, this is an article. The world's financial markets may be in turmoil, but for nearly 3 hours on Tuesday night, the collectors and dealers at Christie's overflowing sales room, that's an auction house
yes.
for art, seem to be focused only on the price of art. And Los Angeles financier Eli Broad, who used to start in Detroit with Kaufman and Broad building the suburbs 50 years ago, he said people would rather have art than gold or paper.
Okay.
Now, you know, we've all been taught about that art is worth so much. You know, somebody put some paint on a canvas.
I know.
And suddenly it becomes worth millions.
And millions and millions.
I don't know what is up with that.
Back to the DIA lately? Wow.
Yeah. He was leaving the sale of post-war and contemporary art after having snapped up several works by artists like Takashi Murakami, and Kara. Is that his name? Yeah, Murakami, I bet it is. And Kara Walker, and he was a happy shopper. It was a big auction, 91 works running the gamut from masters like Warhol and Twombly, you've heard of Twombly, of course, to many of today's trendiest artists, and it made big prices. Now, our suburb's budget for the year for all the social services, for public safety, for all
public
of that.
Works, right.
$18 million. So the sale totaled almost $250 million in
wow.
art people plunked down.
Oh, my gosh.
The evening got off to a roaring start with a group of 26 works belonging to Peter Norton, the Silicon Valley software entrepreneur. Prices for everything, like Mr. Norton's collection, topped expectation with pieces like Paul McCartney's Tomato Head, a childlike, get this. A childlike 1994. You know what that means usually when they say a childlike sculpture? It means he can't do it.
But it's Paul McCartney, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, so like if I tried to do a sculpture, it'd be a childlike sculpture.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, this jerk paid $4.5 million for it.
For Tomato Head?
For Tomato
Damn.
Head, yeah.
He's a serious Beatles collector. Clearly.
Another price was paid for Mr. Gober. Who the hell is Gober?
Don't know.
Robert Gober.
Is it Gober?
Prison window, a 1992 construction that made $3.3 million. But wait a minute, this over here. Oh, yeah, pop art still rules. Pop art is essentially like, looks like cartoons.
Oh, okay. And but it, not, isn't it
yeah, Warhol's part of that.
Why am I pronouncing things wrong tonight?
Topping the evening was Lichtenstein's I Can See the Whole Room and There's Nobody in It, a black canvas from 1961 with a man's face peering through a peephole. So
really?
It's mostly black, and then it's got this peephole, and you see a man's eye. And it was estimated to bring, remember the $18 million figure? That's for our entire city.
Uh-huh.
It was estimated to bring $35 million to $45 million. Three bidders wanted. And the winner was Guy Bennett, a New York dealer who paid $38.5 million for it. But isn't the record. Another Lichtenstein called Oh, All Right sold at Christie's a year ago for $42.6 million. They also sold Andy Warhol's Silver Liz, a 1963 image of Elizabeth Taylor that sold for $16.3 million, and on and on and on. Like, oh, here's one.
It should have been more than the guy with the looking through the hole.
Yeah. Works by Jeff Koons also brought solid prices. The artist's two-ball total equilibrium tank, Spalding Dr. J. Silver series, Wilson Aggressor. That's the name of the painting from 1985.
Okay.
Well, let me tell you what they paid, first off. With fees, $4.2 million, and it is two basketballs floating in a water-filled tank.
My God.
This guy.
That's disgusting.
At another million, he could have had the Brooklyn Bridge, right?
Right.
This, I mean, and people, as Jalene said, 20% of the kids in the United States are hungry or at risk from hunger.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's wrong here?
Yes, a lot.
Where, here, this in, too. Ronald Reagan beat out Franklin Delano Roosevelt as the former president America would like to see in the White House during these trying economic times, according to a new 60 Minutes Vanity Fair poll. 36% of those polled said they wanted the Gipper to lead America out of the economic crisis, while 29% picked Roosevelt.
He caused it!
Yeah. Reaganomics caused this all. The deregulation, right? The permissiveness for greed, the elevation of, and it was to a large
exhausting
between the New Deal and World War II, of course, pulled the U.S. Out of the Depression. What Reagan was the pick of 68% of Republicans. Who else would they pick?
I mean, really?
George Bush, either one of them?
Either one, probably.
Yeah, who else? Let me see. Richard Nixon? Gerald Ford? Yeah, they don't get a lot. Herbert Hoover? No, he didn't do real well. Dwight D. Eisenhower?
Oh,
yeah, but he was the guy that talked about the military-industrial complex.
He did.
Screwing the country.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then we go back, let's see, there was Calvin Coolidge,
okay.
Warren G. Harding, got elected in 1920, one of the most corrupt administrations, and you know, there you go back. So, there you go. Eat the rich.
That segment.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, by the way, the Tea Party got bagged on Tuesday, the elections.
Oh, yeah.
That was terrific.
Yeah, some really good things happened.
In Ohio?
In Ohio. And,
yeah.
Well, and here as well, in Michigan, I thought there was one race that went down. Can't even remember the name of the
No,
bag.
I
can't remember the name of the
But what had happened is the teabaggers had this governor in Ohio, John Kasich, who was the Tea Party. They want to destroy all of our unions because then they can begin to drive the wages down. And a lot of these freaks don't even think about this thing. They just are mesmerized with political power. So they see unions correctly as the bulwark of the Democratic Party, one of the big financiers, people that send out all the workers. So they want to destroy the unions. The fact that it destroys middle class living and, means that people, instead of working for a middle class wage, are going to be working for poverty wages. Then if they think about it, I don't know. Maybe they do. Maybe they are just kind of, totally mean spirited.
But, I tend to think so.
But they're going to start trying to recall now Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker of Wisconsin.
Oh, yes.
You can tell that.
Now, that's something that is there something happening in January with that?
Well, they got to get the signatures in by then. They could begin to do it after a year in office.
So great.
Well, they have a chance because this teabagger governor, John Kasich, they put in, they passed this law, the teabagging
legislature
mm-hmm. in Ohio passed this thing. They were going to end collective bargaining.
Right.
So the people of Ohio rejected it 2-1. So that's
wonderful.
Yeah, in Maine, voters resoundingly defeated again through a citizens' initiative this teabagger effort to eliminate same day voter registration, because you got to remember the Republicans do not want people to vote because
they keep them out of there.
Yeah, because when they vote, they overwhelmingly send in the Democrats. When they stay home and people stay home, and the right wingers come out because they're mesmerized with power.
Yeah, you know, all this baggerish BS we've had to deal with for the past couple of years might turn out to be a blessing in disguise.
Yes. And in Mississippi, can you believe that the people of Mississippi rejected the personhood amendment that would have made a fertilized egg have a person?
Be a person. And that if you destroyed that fertilized egg, that could be murder. But that got shot down, those people. Jeez.
Now, this is absolutely amazing. In Arizona, voters who were so put off by this anti-immigrant stridency of the state Senate's president, another teabagger, Russell Pierce, who was the main sponsor and public face of Arizona's immigration law, that imposed what even the New York Times calls sweeping police state powers to harass and expel people without papers. And if you were driving while Mexican, for instance, and you might have been here, citizen for 100 years, they could still demand your citizenship paper. They recalled him.
That's amazing, isn't it?
That is amazing.
That's wonderful. I mean, there was some good news. We needed some of that to go around in the country, and maybe it'll catch on.
Yeah, well, we started to play a little bit of, first it's hot in here, now it's cold.
Yes.
Jillian's just going for her jacket. Yeah, there a lot of, besides these occupation camps, one in Detroit, Occupy Detroit, there was also a big prayer deal in Detroit over the weekend. We'll tell you about that when we come back.
Oh, David Rovics when we come back.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. David.
Don't forget our guest.
Yeah. No, we'll do that first.
Anyway.
Sorry, David.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jillian Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Jillian will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Trojan Man!
Attention, pleasure seekers. Trojan Bearskin Condoms are bringing couples closer than ever before. At an amazing 40% thinner than our standard condoms, couples are literally singing their praises.
Irresistible closeness. Yeah. We're in passionate harmony.
Wow.
Together as one, more connected than ever before.
Now that's pretty close.
Trojan Bearskin Condoms with triple tested quality. Trojan, America's number one most trusted condom brand.
Can't wait to get it on.
Do you have unfiled tax returns or owe the IRS or state more than $10,000? If you don't take action now, your tax problem is going to get worse, much worse. Seizure of property, bank levies, wage garnishments, and potential criminal prosecution. And if you owe the IRS back payroll taxes, chances are you will be visited at your home or business by an IRS agent. Don't become paralyzed by fear. Take action now. Call the experts at U.S. Tax Shield for help. Our team of experienced tax attorneys can get you protected, stop collections, and negotiate a permanent settlement with the IRS and state, potentially saving you thousands of dollars. At U.S. Tax Shield, our tax advisors will review your case for free, inform you of your rights, and give you a guaranteed quote. No games and no tricky upsells. That's why we have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau and thousands of satisfied clients. Put an end to your torment. Get protected. Get the shield. Call U.S. Tax Shield now at 800-656-9393. That's 800-656-9393. 800-656-9393.
101.1
WRIF.
What's up, everybody? This is Sully from Godsmack.
Hello, Motor City. This is Mike McCready from Pearl Jam.
Hello, Motor City. This is Jimmy Page from Led Zeppelin. Your radio's locked on 101 WRIF. If it rocks, it's on the roof.
Everything that rocks.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit MatrixDirect.com.
Sometimes I worry about what would happen to my family if I lost my job. But I never really thought about what would happen to them if they lost me. and I didn't have life insurance. My cousin's husband died, and now she might have to sell her house just to make ends meet. I don't ever want to put my wife through that. So I called Matrix Direct.
Hi, I'm Brent Langdon for Matrix Direct. We partnered with American General Life to find you their lowest rates on term life insurance products. If you're 40 years old and married, we could find you a $250,000 policy for less than $16 a month. Call now for a free, no-obligation quote. 1-800-916-1059.
I feel so much better now that I called.
It only takes 5 minutes to see how you could save up to 70%. Call now. 1-800-916-1059. 1-800-916-1059.
This is an urgent message for all individuals with extremely large credit card debt. No matter how much you owe on your credit cards, the company that has settled more debt than anyone in the U.S. could settle your debt too. While you make one low monthly program payment, you have the opportunity to hear how low your monthly program payment could be for free. This free information is available now simply by calling Freedom Debt Relief at 1-800-507-3949. I repeat, if you have extremely large credit card debt, you now have the ability to reduce your total debt and get one simple low monthly program payment. This could allow you to resolve your debt faster than you ever thought possible. But you should act quickly. Call Freedom Debt Relief now to learn how much you could save. 1-800-507-3949. Again, this life-changing information is available for free. To find out how much you may be able to save, call today. 1-800-507-3949. That's 1-800-507-3949. 1-800-507-3949.
One size does not fit all, especially when you're talking about your mortgage. Introducing the all-new Yourgage from Quicken Loans. Yourgage is better than a traditional mortgage because it conforms to your goals. In fact, it's the only home loan that allows you to custom design your term anywhere between 8 to 30 years. Here's how it works. Let's say you've got 8 years left on your mortgage and you want to refinance to a lower interest rate. The Quicken Loans 8-year fixed Yourgage can help. It keeps your term short and lowers your monthly payment. Just call Quicken Loans at 888-249-1425. The Quicken Loans Yourgage. It's a home loan on your terms. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. Nationwide licensing number 3030. Other restrictions apply. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. Call 888-249-1425. That's 888-249-1425.
Back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julene.
Thank you very much. Welcome back. Peter Werby, Julene Jordan with you. And you got a little, just a little taste of what we're going to play later.
No, I hit
the wrong button. David Rovix has been called the Phil Oakes of this generation. He's a singer-songwriter. He travels all around the world singing his songs of love and revolution.
And he was just here in Detroit.
He was just here in Detroit. Jalene and I are both proud to say he's a friend of ours, a wonderful musician. And right now he is in Portland, Oregon, where is beginning to hit the fan. David Rovix, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you, Peter.
How's everything going? How's everything going in downtown Portland?
Well, at the moment, last night was a real wonderful, inspiring moment. It was conveniently enough, the mayor of Portland here, Sam Adams, he gave a sort of deadline of 12:01, midnight last night to vacate the parks. So everybody in the whole area knew that this was the deadline, so it made it pretty easy for a good bunch of folks to show up. So even though it was pouring down rain at midnight, I'd say we had many thousands. I don't know how many thousands, but many thousands.
Now, this was all to protect the right of occupied Portland, Oregon, to remain there.
Yeah, and then today, so there was this sort of standoff with the police all night, and they didn't do anything. And then today, this morning, with a much smaller crowd there, they arrested 50 people, and they then they fenced off the parks. And now there's a general assembly happening of a few hundred folks in Pioneer Square, about 50 feet from me.
What was their impetus to arrest 50 people this morning? Because it was easier without the big crowd?
Yeah. They waited until I think there was like 1,000. I heard, on Reuters, there was 1,000 people left at the point when the cops decided to arrest 50 people.
Now, with Portland, Oregon, this is like hippie left-wing liberal heaven. What the hell's going on?
Yeah, it's. I think the policy of the local government here for a while was to just kind of let it go, much like I think they're doing in Detroit last I checked, and then it wouldn't die under its own weight like I think they were hoping it would, and so then they decided that the next move would be to use some force. Liberal governments only go so far. They don't want to have, what become basically homeless encampments, raising attention to the dire poverty that so many Americans are in.
David Rovics is our guest here. You can go to David Rovics, R-O-V-I-C-S, davidrovics.com. There's hundreds of downloadable songs and a brand new one we're going to play in just a minute.
We're going to debut it here on national radio.
It is. I'm going to fade you down just for a second here because it's getting a little noisy. But the General Assembly that we're not talking about the United Nations now, but every encampment of the Occupy movement around the world has these General Assemblies or GAs that are these democratic meetings that are run by consensus and pretty much leaderless. So you don't have anybody dominating things or any group dominating things. And it's the way decisions are made. And that's what, if you may hear one of the chants, this is what democracy looks like. So, and that's where David Rovics is right now, Portland, Oregon. Well, what's the general situation out there now, David? What do they expect to happen next?
Yeah, I don't know actually what the plan is. I'm not sure where things are going from here. I'm sure that there will continue to be regular meetings, regular general assemblies here. But whether there's going to be another attempt to set up a camp, I don't know. I've been on tour around the U.S. and Canada for the past 2 months or so, and this is the 19th Occupy that I've hung out at. And what has been happening in cities where the police or the local authorities are not allowing camping is there's still lots of general assemblies happening. There's still this kind of movement happening with usually a focal point of a certain place where they're having meetings every day or every other day, I think, in the case of Portland. But there's no camp, whereas in other places where they've been able to have a camp, whether because the authorities are cooperative or because, they're resistant enough to the authorities that they're able to maintain a camp despite uncooperative authorities, such as in Oakland or New York City, then it has a different flavor and it tends to be a much more, optimistic feel when they're able to maintain a camp. In places where they can't maintain a camp, there's a lot more of a siege kind of feeling. And I think things are also more dangerous in those kinds of situations because there's still people wanting to use the tactic of holding space and sleeping outside, but they're not doing it in tents. And, in the winter in places like Minneapolis, that's not...
It's going to be tough in Detroit as well. And are you fearful at all that I am, and this is not the doing of the occupiers, but rather the city authorities, that the focus is getting to be more on the actions of the city, the occupying space, than the message of the 99%? It's shifting we don't hear as much about the banksters and the political and economic situation as much.
Yeah, I think what I'm seeing is I'm just guessing what's happening behind those doors in all sorts of media outlets. But what I think is happening is the media, the sort of corporate media, is starting to get a sense of how to spin this whole thing. And they're focusing on drug addicts, suicides, whatever is happening that is negative from their view. and of course, which is negative generally, but I think that, of course, what they never seem to be talking about is this society is full of course, you know, there's 18 veterans every day who kill themselves in this country, and one of them happened to kill themselves in an encampment. And, you know, are they going to blame the encampment for the fact that this guy was probably, you know, severely troubled? You know, that's just, you know, if my experience with these encampments has been people who are very troubled, who are naturally attracted to a tent city rather than sleeping on some sidewalk or something. People who are in some kind of desperate strait are finding these camps to be very useful and therapeutic and making life easier. I mean, maybe not as easy if they had a home, but easier than their conditions were prior to these camps. So what's happening in reality is just the opposite of what much of the media is portraying. But, you know, they've certainly decided to shift the focus from, you know, the whole question of the 1% and the concentration of wealth. But at the same time, that still manages to poke through regularly.
Well, David Robix, I think we can probably bring that focus back by debuting your latest song. And saying thanks to you for being on the show. You and I were down at the Detroit encampment, so I hope you're including that in your 19.
Hey, by the way. By the way, David, they are telling the Detroit camp encampment tomorrow night at midnight, Peter, that they have to get out of there.
Yeah. So anyway, you can go to davidrovix.com, R-O-V-I-C-S, davidrovix.com. There's all sorts of free downloadable songs. There's David's songbook. There's videos. There's everything.
Dates.
And we'll be sure to let you know when David Robix comes back to Detroit. David, always wonderful. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Peter. Thanks, Julian. Talk to you soon.
We'll talk to you soon.
Bye,
okay.
David.
Do you want to talk this song up like you're doing your DJ thing?
Well, this is called Occupy Wall Street, and we're going to stay right here is the message. And what it does, excuse me, is explains why we're doing it.
Because this is where they buy the politicians. Because this is where power has its seat. Because 99% of us are suffering at the mercy of the madmen on this street. Because all of us are victims of class warfare. Being waged on us by the 1%. Because these greedy banksters rob the country, leaving us without the means to pay the rent. Because the last time that we had a decent government was about 1932. Because we the people are supposed to run this country, but instead it's all run by and for the few. Because now we know the rich do not pay taxes, but when they need a hand at us, we'll bail them out. Because we suspected we lived in a plutocracy. But suddenly, of late, there is no doubt. So we're gonna stay right here. We're gonna stay right here. Because both my parents lost their savings. Because I have never opened an account. Because the interest on my credit card just doubled. And now I can't pay the minimum amount. Because these budget cuts are just immoral. And our schools are still overcrowded as they are. Because there are no buses where I live. But I can't afford to drive a car. Because so many of us don't have health insurance. The rest of us have it, but it sucks. Because the rich are flying in their private jets, while the rest of us are slogging through the muck. Because capitalism isn't working. This system has just failed to produce. Because the 1% are prospering, while the rest of us just suffer their abuse. So we're gonna stay right here. We're gonna stay right here.
That's David Rovics, and you go to David Rovics, R-O-V-I-C-S, davidrovics.com, and get that song. In fact, Jolene said don't talk about it, but it was kind of rolling when it shouldn't have been rolling, because just when you open up David's website, it starts,
right there,
it starts playing.
Yeah. But also, if you go to audio video, that's kind of down to the bottom, that's where he has all of his music, and he has a boatload of it.
Yeah.
And you can download it for free. And he's cool with that because he wants people to hear his message.
Yeah, and let me see. In fact, on his, I closed his site because it was playing it. But it said he's sort of the musical version of Amy Goodman's Democracy Now.
Yeah, and he's often compared to Pete Seeger. In fact, Pete Seeger loves David's music so much, he sent David a check for $100 and said, send me everything you got.
Huh.
I said, I can't believe you even cashed that. You should have framed it. He's like, I needed the money.
Did any of you say, who's Pete Seeger? It's not Bob's dad.
Yeah, it's S-E-E-G-E-R.
Yeah, yeah.
Google him.
Ask Bob Dylan who Pete Seeger is.
Right, exactly.
Right. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. And
we're ready to take your calls. We've been kind of busy, but let's
open up. Hi. All of a sudden your name disappeared from my screen. Hi, you're on the air.
Jason and Peter, I got to say that I wish you were on more than just Sunday nights. I really enjoy listening to your show.
Oh, thank you.
You're a very well-spoken and intellectual person. But I just wanted to say one thing. You mentioned that thing about Ronald Reagan as having caused or having partially caused our current situation.
Mm-hmm.
When it was, in fact, Jimmy Carter, a Democrat, who opened the door to everyone and their brothers being able to purchase a house. And a lot of these mortgage companies and the federal government teamed up with Barney Frank and all that and all those people that allow people to purchase homes with no money down and no real proof.
The Barney Frank thing again?
Well,
really?
You know, the root of it all isn't these bad mortgages. That's a component part of it. But what it was the deregulation of the financial sector that had turned what was at one time financing new businesses into this huge crap game and creating these exotic financial instruments that not talk about the 1%, very few of the 1% can even understand. So it took an economy that should be based on work, pay, consumption, or, you know, owning a place and paying people into just this huge crap game. So it's Reaganomics. It's supply side economics that did all of this. I mean, sure, that's part of it. And I don't want to take the Democrats completely off the hook.
Right.
But
we never do that.
Yeah, we would never do that. But
or probably 60% the problem of what's going on here. And the idea of corporate greed being mostly a Republican thing, the fact of the matter is that they did a study and empirical evidence shows that a larger percentage of charitable contributions are from Republicans. Not because they make more money. I'm talking about the percentage of people's incomes. A larger amount comes from people who would register themselves as a Republican as opposed to a Democrat.
Wait. You're going to tell me now that Republicans are
more charitable?
Are compassionate and caring?
Republicans are much more compassionate than Democrats.
Nobody believes that.
Well, you know, he
nobody
sounded,
believes
he
that.
Sounded so sane. You sounded so sane at the beginning of this conversation.
Crucified Sarah Palin.
Wait a minute.
What?
This was self-immolation, just like just like all these characters. I mean, listen. Remember John Edwards?
Sarah Palin.
Yeah, I remember her. did quite a number on Clinton as well. I mean, when people make egregious mistakes and Democrats make them, but there's something like I say, I don't want to get into this thing like I'm defending the Democratic Party or Democrats or what have you. And the Democrats have to skip to the loo of the corporations as well, because this is a democracy that's been bought and sold. Is it this week? Oh, yeah. A little later in the show, if you can stay up and listen to it or get it on the podcast, our old pal Greg Palast, P-A-L-A-S-T. Go to GregPalast.com.
He's a journalist and he writes for the
Guardian of London. Yeah, he can't get printed here in the United States because he tells the truth. He lays it out. The liberal media will not let him spill his stuff out. Anyway, he has a book called The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. And you've got to, if you want to get elected, I mean, that's why people that aren't just dead in the center of things to the right, that's why, well, for us, the center winds up looking like leftists and under this system, and then it just goes further and further right. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your
now,
call.
Now, I do know a few compassionate Republicans.
Well, you know what?
I do.
My mom? Yeah. They do give to charity. They give to charities. They give to their church. They give, you know.
My mom?
Yeah.
My dad?
Yeah.
Trying to think of anyone else.
Well, they're more than often willing to tithe within their church or.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then all these little, like.
They have charities.
The rich ladies, you know.
Yeah, the rich ladies have charities.
The rich ladies who have their benefits and their charities. And what's so funny is. They probably like getting catfights the whole time over it. They're not even focusing on what the cause is they're raising money for.
Well, they're all they're all about destroying middle class life in this society and driving more and more people to the bottom, lowering wages, denying people simple benefits, health care, and what have you. So maybe they give $100 to the church doesn't really compensate for being part of a process that's driving America to the ground.
It's paying for that giant new rectory that they're building, or the coffee shop, or the gift shop that they have in their church, like at my sister's church that she made me go to. Thought I was going to die.
All right, we're going to talk about religion when we come back.
Well, speaking of that, perfect timing.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm going to take your calls.
There's a candidate that said God persuaded him to run.
I wonder who that was.
Well, it could have been any one of those
freaks.
Yeah, I could
have been. Yeah, you're right.
And also that big Detroit prayer event over the weekend. Anybody see that? Give us a call. 313-298-WRI. What do we pay this guy for?
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
When it's raining hard outside, can your roof still keep out the leaks inside? If it's time for a new roof, get your roofing installed the right way with Sears. Call Sears for a free in-home consultation at 1-877-938-1414. You can save $500 if you call right now. Sears licensed fully insured contractors can get your roofing job done right. Sears has a variety of shingles and styles that are built for long-lasting performance, and you'll save $500 if you call now. So, for roofing done right, call Sears for a free in-home consultation at 1-877-938-1414. Hurry, offer ends soon. Not available in all states. Installation provided by Sears Authorized Licensed Contractors. License information available upon request. That's Sears Roofing. Call right now and save $500. Call 1-877-938-1414. That's 1-877-938-1414. Sears.
Trojan Man.
Attention, pleasure seekers. Trojan Bearskin Condoms are bringing couples closer than ever before. At an amazing 40% thinner than our standard condoms, just listen to what this couple has to say.
The irresistible
closeness and
amazing
sensitivity
allow us
to feel
more
connected
than
ever
before.
It's like we become one.
Wow. Can't get much closer than that.
Get irresistibly closer with Trojan Bearskin Condoms. Triple tested quality from Trojan. America's number one most trusted condom brand.
Can't wait to get it on.
Betsy, look at these sweaters. They'd look amazing on our girls.
Maybe.
Come on, what's wrong?
Suzanne, I have no business being in the store. I should not be shopping. Things are really tight. We're behind on our mortgage.
Listen, Bill and I had the same problem, and we got some really great counseling, and it was free. I'm going to email you the information.
If you even think you may be in danger of foreclosure, call the National Foundation for Credit Counseling today at 866-687-6322 or visit mortgagehelpnow.org. Public service from the NFCC.
Who's watching your home when you're not there? It could be a burglar. Burglars prefer to break in when they think no one is home and no one will stop them. Don't be an easy target for intruders. Protect your home with a free security system monitored by ADT, the leader in home security. Pick up your phone now and get free hardware, free medical and fire alerts, and free activation. It's an $850 value. Just call Protect Your Home, your authorized ADT dealer, at 1-877-653-8844. you'll get 24-hour protection, and there's no cost for parts or activation. Call now about a free security system monitored by ADT. Call 1-877-653-8844. $99 installation charge, 36-month monitoring agreement, and $35.99 per month. Call for terms and conditions to this offer and protect your home license numbers. Call now, 1-877-653-8844. That's 1-877-653-8844.
Is it time to replace your home's carpet or flooring? Call Sears Flooring to get shop-at-home convenience you can trust. Sears Flooring brings the showroom to you with a wide range of carpet, tile, hardwood, and laminate. And if you call right now, you'll save 20%. Call for a free in-home consultation at 1-888-491-3939. Sears Flooring has many styles to match your home and your budget. Your new flooring will be precisely installed, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. So call Sears Flooring right now and save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. Offer ends soon. Not available in all areas. Installation provided by Sears Authorized License Contractors. License information available upon request. Call Sears Flooring. You'll save 20% if you call now. Call 1-888-491-3939. That's 1-888-491-3939. Sears.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back to our second hour at 1 a.m. Eastern Time. I'm going to be airing a couple of interviews that I did earlier this week, one with the incomparable Greg Palast, P-A-L-A-S-T. Go to gregpalast.com, get a little preview. He's got a brand new book out called Vultures. Can't remember.
Well, that's two pretty heavy hitters on the show tonight, you know?
Yeah. David Rovics.
Yeah.
And Greg Palast. Yeah. Here I am. We're blasting Rick Perry for not being able to remember things.
Well, what?
Vulture's Picnic, I think it is.
You're not running for president of the United States, Peter.
And, well, maybe I'm, you know, I have a little bit of sympathy for him because I have a head full of ideas that are driving me insane, like
Peter,
Bob Dylan sang.
You have me.
Yes, I do.
He doesn't have a me.
Steve from Farmington Hills wrote in to calltalkyes at yahoo.com. Don't count out Rick Perry for 1 second. Once the pizza man goes away, all those voters that were backing Kane will go right back where they came from, back to Perry. Yes, Perry's an idiot, but before the pizza man came along, Perry was leading Romney, 34%, 28%. Romney is still stuck at 28%. I see Perry someday again leading Romney. Sad, he says.
Hey, bring it on. The guy's great entertainment.
Herman.
All of them. Perry and Herman Cain.
Have you been watching those debates?
Life
is short.
I haven't, yeah. I actually had a thing, you know. That's what I say when I'm making excuses for not watching. I had a thing I had to do.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah, never mind. That was back to that sex and dope thing. No?
Moi?
Wow, okay. Here's Steve in Westland. Steve, hi, you're on the air. Welcome. Wait a minute. Go ahead, you're on the air. What? Steve, hi.
Hello, Peter. Hello, Tangley.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling. You just had a caller on the radio talking about the Barney Frank and the CRA and the whole Republican meme of this. They caused the housing crisis.
Right.
Yeah, like, you think he's watched Fox News lately?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I could give you three sources off the top of my head. If you go to Paul Krugman's blog and you look at an article called The Big Lie, if you go to Taibbi's blog, Matt Taibbi reports for the Rolling Stone, and he can tell you it's titled Bloomberg's Marie Antoinette Moment, okay? And there's even the Washington
Post. Let them eat cake, yeah.
ran an article about the big lie. And it's this idea that something Carter did back in the 70s caused this. There's a Newsweek cover from 2004 with a bunch of Bush cronies taking a chainsaw to all the regulations that guarded our housing market and how the government, how our GSE funded that. right? But you can't, I don't know how to have a conversation with someone who's so unaware, or, you know, all three sources I gave you, I can imagine him, you know, coming off with his liberal this, liberal that kind of rant that they all have.
Well, he probably.
Or calling me a communist, right?
Well, he probably, you know, it's sort of Fox News talking points, right?
Well, I just don't understand how we can have a legitimate debate in this country if we spend all our time trying to explain to people what's really going on because they're so misinformed.
I got you. Yeah, well, it's tough. It's one of the reasons we're here. I mean, well, I was thinking, let me be, you know, this is the age of the public confessional. So, what are you gonna? I have what is it stuff? Never mind. I'm making a bad joke. Never mind. Anyway, I was thinking if he would have called the Tom Hartman show, and Tom lives and breathes this. Remember, the caller said to me, "Wished I did this 5 days a week," and it sort of, you know, I didn't come up with all the facts and figures to refute it. In general, I did, but somebody like Tom, who does this 5 days a week and thinks about it 24/7, he's got all this information right at the you know, right at his tip of his tongue, and maybe even has you know, it on his computer. But you're right. It's and if you're listening to Fox News, the old thing about figures don't lie, but liars can figure, right?
Indeed.
Okay. Thank you very much, Steve. I appreciate it very much. Speaking of faux news, F-A-U-X, which means fake, right?
Yeah.
An Occupy Wall Street commercial aired Wednesday night during the same show that routinely referred to the Wall Street protesters as far-left loons, and advertising spots on the O'Reilly Factor were crowdfunded using a startup fundraising platform and purchased through Google TV ads.
Amazing.
You know what crowdfunding? You know what that is?
Well, I know.
Things
I really
like Kickstarter that you can put on there that you need. You say, I want $5,000. Yeah, online.
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
I participated in that.
Wednesday night's commercial lineup was part of a larger campaign that purchased at least 109 ad spots for the commercial throughout last weekend and Monday. Anybody see that? Anybody bother to watch O'Reilly?
I don't even know what channel. I mean, I don't even know where to find it.
That's good.
I know.
The campaign, which was, oh, it says, was managed on a Kickstarter for media buys called Loud Sauce, raised more than $6,000, and it goes on with all the stuff like that. It probably wouldn't have been possible to buy this much ad time on a $6,000 budget without Google TV ads, which auctions ad time for broadcast. Now, also, the Occupy Wall Street has taken in about $500,000 in contributions from people.
Wow.
They're so taken by it.
Yeah.
And it's a second campaign for Occupy Wall Street ads that aims to raise $15,000 is already up on the site. Did you know that Bill O'Reilly wrote a book on Lincoln?
Oh, yeah. I did not know that until I saw an article about it being yanked.
Yeah, yanked from Ford's Theater, where Lincoln was assassinated in Washington, D.C.
So have I.
Of all places, this says from the Washington Post, you'd expect to find Bill O'Reilly's new history, Killing Lincoln, the shocking assassination that changed America forever, Ford's Theater. Do you have this right here?
I don't have it right, but I can find it.
I am coughing. The site of the dreadful act should rank right at the top, but you do better to search for the bestseller on Amazon because it's been banned from the theater's store. The crime? Bill O'Reilly and his co-author have displayed a serial disregard for historical fact. Gee, how surprising.
Bill O'Reilly?
Yeah. For purported history of the assassination and, quote, unsanitized and uncompromising no-spin American story, as the authors put it, Killing Lincoln is sloppy with the facts and slim on documentation, according to a study conducted by Ray Emerson, the deputy superintendent of Ford's Theater's National Historic Site. So.
Well, yeah, so bye-bye, Bill.
Yeah. Other Lincoln experts have also sounded off in a review published in the November issue of North and South, the official magazine of the Civil War Society. Historian Edward Steers Jr. cites many instances where the book strays from documented history, then asks if the authors made mistakes in names, places, and events, what else did they get wrong? How can the reader rely on anything that appears in Bill O'Reilly's Killing Lincoln? And by implication, how can you count on the veracity, the truth, the accuracy of anything that this media whore.
I know. He's just awful. And it's amazing that he has the highest ratings out of all of them.
All right. Now, we kind of gave this away a little earlier, but here it is again.
Okay.
You cannot petition the Lord with prayer!
You cannot.
You cannot. Well,
Jim Morrison says
it.
He's like a god to me.
At the beginning of the Soft Parade.
Yeah.
Yeah. Title cut from that album. And that essentially is the religious philosophy of Calvinism, where the elect, those that will go to heaven, have already been determined. And you can tell.
We already know.
Can tell the elect by their good works. In other words, who's going to go to heaven are all the rich people.
Right.
Yeah.
Ooh,
so all you ne'er-do-wells, all you poor folks, all you working people, the people that make the world go round, no room. Because the Bill O'Reillys are going to be up there in heaven. But anyways, everybody doesn't agree that you cannot petition the Lord with prayer. I never did get it. Not being a religious person, I don't get it at all. I don't even understand why an omniscient God, an all-seeing, omnipotent, omniscient, all-seeing, all-powerful, mm-hmm. all that.
All-loving.
Why does he need to be worshipped? What is up with that?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a crutch.
Any of you, well, that's what we think about religion. But I wonder, does it say in the Bible that God has to be worshipped? It must.
Oh, well, someone out there tell us, because I certainly know. You know more about the Bible than most people I know, Peter.
Well, I've got a lot of Bibles at home.
You do?
Yeah.
Do you have a Quran?
A Quran?
A Quran.
Oh, a Quran.
My words are off.
I thought you said a crayon, you know, like a Crayola.
Right.
Yeah, I have bronze, so I do my artwork. Do I have a Quran? I may. I'll check it out. But anyway, there were some people praying for Detroit, going to lift Detroit in prayer. You've seen those bumper stickers, Detroit in prayer, which I have no idea what that even means.
I don't either.
I mean, I don't understand a lot of these phrases. What does in God we trust mean?
They trust God, I don't know. That's pretty easy.
Yeah, but...
But why? Right?
Well...
And why is it on currency?
Okay, anyway. A group that counts Islam among the ills facing our nation began a 24-hour prayer rally this last Friday, in an area with one of the largest Muslim communities in the United States. See, these are the troublemakers, you know? These are the people that pit people against one another. Let's try to find out what our differences are and then fight about them, okay?
Yeah. Doesn't sound very Christian-like to me.
Well, actually, it does.
Well, when it comes to war.
Remember the Crusades?
Right. But, you know, as far as people go to church and church-going people.
The gathering at Ford Field, where, of course, the Lions play, is designated to tackle issues such as the economy, racial strife, same-sex relations, and abortion. These people know squat about the economy, and they certainly know nothing about racial strife. But the decade-old organization known as The Call said Detroit is a microcosm of our national crisis. So they figured something out, right?
Yeah.
In all areas, including, quote, the rising tide of the Islamic movement. So where is King Richard the Lionhearted when we need him, right? Leaders of The Call believe a satanic spirit is shaping all parts of U.S. society and must be challenged through intensive Christian prayer and fasting. Such demonic spirit has taken hold of specific areas, Detroit among them. You know, I wish we were on cable, you know, so I could just say F you.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you get it, even though I didn't have to say it.
Right.
In the months ahead of their rallies, teams of local organizers often travel their communities performing a ritual called Divorcing Baal, B-A-A-L, which is the name of a demon spirit to drive out the devil from each location.
Okay.
Yeah.
Really?
But you know, you notice they come to Detroit. They don't think Baal lives in Birmingham or West Bloomfield or Grosse Pointe.
You have to go to...
Which I don't think, by the way, I don't think Baal lives there either. Certainly doesn't live in Detroit. I mean, what Detroit is suffering is what any poor modern area suffers. It doesn't matter what country you're in, doesn't matter the color, race, religion, whatever. If you have a poor city in the midst of wealth, a portion of the people act badly. And you got to remember, too, is that even in the most dire circumstances, the vast overwhelming majority of people act in terms of what defines the human spirit, that is mutual aid, compassion, love.
Helping your neighbor.
Helping your neighbor. But when poverty conditions dominate, then you get, I don't know, 2%, 10%. I've always said, if you get 10% of the people in any area that are acting off a script of preying on their neighbors, it's hell. But you're also in a situation, as Jolene was saying earlier, about poverty that manifests itself in children of not having enough to eat or of being at risk for hunger. And when you move into other areas of the world, actual hunger, people starving to death and what have you. Isn't that where Baal is? Why the hell don't these people go there, to use a word they probably wouldn't like? And does anybody want to try to defend the idea that if you beseech this Christian God, I guess, I don't know, what happens if you beseech some other God? You know, well, they're not real, right? They don't exist.
There's only one, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, the Jews could do it, right? At least the Christians admit that the Jews are worshiping the same God.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Just, there's a whole different thing going on with Jesus.
So, I mean, it's such arrogance and such insanity. I mean, when if you say God speaks to you, you're a candidate for the loony bin.
I agree. Well, I mean, George W. Bush said that God told him to go to war, for crying out loud. We know that was a lie because it was all a lie.
Yeah. Yeah. God, think of, wow.
Wow.
That's great.
Thank you.
God could not have told him to go to war because they knew that he knew, because God is omniscient, all seeing.
Yeah.
He knew there were no weapons of mass destruction. And he knew George W. Bush knew there were no weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. And he knew that,
Cheney,
EPA.
Rumsfeld,
EPA.
Rick Perry.
Colin Powell.
Oh.
He knew Colin Powell was lying at the United Nations. God did.
Yes, right? God did.
And so did George W. Bush.
Yeah.
Wow. So does that mean they're like in the same league?
I think so.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Now, what would you say if, I mean, I guess this is not so uncommon.
If you know someone who says, God told me to do something, what would you say?
Yeah, I'd say you're a bleeding loony.
You need to check it before you wreck it.
But that's exactly what Herman Cain said. He said that God convinced him to enter the race for president, and he compared himself to Moses. Now, he's another footnote. He's out of here.
Oh, this guy. I mean, the sexual harassment thing. You think he would have gotten a little bit humbled. Backed off a little bit, maybe, after he's been accused by all these women, and more women keep coming out about being sexually harassed by this guy. Now he goes, instead of being humble, he says God told him to run for president?
He speaks to God. Here is this God figure ruling an entire universe, and it's pretty big. I mean, unless you really go for one of those narrow things. But, you know, modern Christians believe this, you know, that there's hundreds of billions of planets and suns and all that. So he's got a lot on his plate.
Yeah.
And he's going, Herman. Herman, I
Herman
need
Cain,
you.
The
Herman
pizza
Cain,
man.
I need
Good
you
guy.
To run for the presidency.
Darth Vader.
Yeah, it does sound like Darth Vader.
That's Darth God. Yeah. Herman Cain, you make a damn fine pie. You should run for president. And so he compared himself to Moses, said, you've got the wrong man, Lord. Are you sure? What is that, anyway?
It's apparently Governor Rick Perry's wife, Anita, said she felt God was speaking to her about the race.
Oh, for crying out loud.
Hey, Anita, listen, is your old man in the room? No? Tell him to run for president.
This is so crazy.
Can anyone take them seriously? Now, I want to ask you something. Please call us, 313-298-WRIF. I guess it's going to fall on people's politics, so we're not going to get a good answer. Herman Cain said, Cain, his last name's Cain. It's like Abel and Cain. Oh, my God.
Well, that's part of his thing.
So here's what Herman Cain said. He said, the Lord persuaded him after much prayer. That's when I prayed and prayed and prayed, said Herman Cain. I'm a man of faith. I had to do a lot of praying for this one, more praying than I've ever done before in my life. And when I finally realized it was God saying that this is what I needed to do, it was like Moses. And it was like, you've got the wrong man, Lord. Are you sure? And I said unto the Lord.
You're adding now.
I know. I love those guys. I love those. I listen, you know.
Preachers?
Those African-American preachers. Man, I love to hear them.
There's a lot of passion going on.
There's a lot of
there,
passion
you know?
Going on. Yeah. But anyway.
Cain said once he made the decision, he did not look back.
Are these, I mean, do you think they're sincere? Did they just make all this up?
They're
just
making it up. They're
You don't think they believe it themselves?
No, because it can't be. Yeah. It just can't be. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I don't know. I suppose it's true.
I mean, really, he needed to just back the you-know-what up instead of go get crazier. But you know what? It is great. I'm having great fun here reading about it. Okay. I'm having a great time.
Yeah, and, well, there actually are some things about the sexual harassment thing. Yeah, you know, that women, when it's that sequential, what is it up to now, four?
Well, I think there's five now.
Five women who say that they were done badly by Herman.
And then there was a little thing, maybe some of you saw it online, where Herman Cain was caught on camera making a statement about, someone said something about Anita Hill, and he says, oh, you think she's going to endorse me?
I didn't think that was so bad. Settle down.
God.
I didn't think that was the worst thing. But, I mean, the whole idea that he's bringing in the Anita Hill hearings where she testified that she essentially was sexually harassed by, I'm having all the...
Clarence Thomas,
yeah, thank you.
On the Supreme Court, yeah.
On the Supreme Court is really bad because essentially...
Making light of it.
Yeah. Well, not only was he making light of it, that Clarence Thomas, too, was lying under oath. He, in fact, was sexually harassing
Anita Hill.
Yeah.
Another liar. They're all liars because they're opening their mouths.
Yeah. All right. How can you tell when they're lying? Their mouths are open. They're talking.
All right. We got some calls to take. Let's
see. Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan,
313-298-9743. There are a couple of open lines, so get in now.
Okay. Here is Justin in Ferndale. Justin, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, what's up? I wanted to talk for a minute about that religious stuff you mentioned a couple minutes ago.
Sure.
Yeah.
You were talking about all these people. I lift Detroit in prayer. I lift Detroit in prayer. All the signs and everything.
Mm-hmm.
They don't lift a hammer. They don't lift any nails. They don't try and help anybody. They
Wait a minute. You got to do more praying. I don't think prayer does any good at all, but how do you know?
That's exactly my point on these people saying, I'm praying. I'm doing everything.
He's saying, why aren't they? Well, they're not like actually working for an organization that is helping repair people's houses or building houses like Habitat or whatever.
But they very well may. I mean, I suspect that anybody that I, when I see somebody that has a sign on their car that says, I lift Detroit in prayer, and I would say that almost every car I've seen it has the driver's been African American, and I think they're probably that means they're probably connected to their church, and a lot of the African American churches, most of them in Detroit, do a lot of good work in the city,
right?
And try to help it the best they can. I mean, it's trying to resuscitate. I hate to say it, it's trying to resuscitate a corpse at this point.
Yeah,
things are that bad in Detroit, and unless there's this massive government stimulus. It's going to get worse.
I think what our caller is saying, Peter, is that why are they just gathering in a building and praying? Why aren't they gathering in a building and praying and then going out and doing something? Well,
maybe they do. Like, what's the Focus Hope?
Yeah.
And what have. But I'll tell you, and Justin, in every period in American history when there's been huge depressions, and the depression of the 1930s was a light one compared to some of them in the 19th century, there was also huge revival movements because people get desperate. Because if there's not a social movement, like in the 1930s, although there were religious figures, they were eclipsed by economic and political movements that moved in a this world problem solving mode, rather than hoping that the God of the universe would take pity on us. And really, what it was, if you think about it, it's the nature of the system to be cyclical. So there's boom times and then there's depression.
Yeah.
Plus, you have the system always being looted by the 1%, by the wealthy, which makes lots of people's lives just miserable. So praying to God, I mean, maybe, you ought to be praying to God to eat the rich.
Pray for something else.
Thank you, Justin. Appreciate your call. Here's Chris in West Bloomfield. Chris, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. I was actually quite intrigued by this because, I would think that you would want to run for president to make this country better as opposed to you want power because God told you to.
Well, there
That's
you go.
That's a good point.
But, yeah, I think they... Wouldn't they all say at least that they're doing so for the betterment of the country? Let me, you know, Herman Cain said that this whole thing with the sexual harassment charges from so many women was a result of the Democratic Party and the liberal media, which is absolutely nuts.
Yeah, he had nothing to do with it, and that's why he paid the $180,000, jerk.
Well, the last person in of this crowd that the Democrats want to run against President Obama next year is Mitt Romney. They, in other words, they don't want to face him. They would love to face Herman Cain or Michelle Bachmann.
Sure, bring the crazies on.
Yeah, bring the crazies on, because then he would get like 70% of the vote or something like that. So it certainly wasn't then. All right, thank you very much. By the way, I was just looking at this secular document called the Constitution of the United States of America.
Yeah, I see that, your pocket constitution.
And I can't find that one little phrase that I've read before. It said that Congress shall not make any, in other words, they can't demand a religious test ever. I mean, that has that word ever in it. I do remember that. I think that
and that's for people who are running for office.
Yeah,
right?
There should never be a religious test ever for anyone running for public office.
Well, that's out the window because religion has won some pretty big elections, and also different legislation that has been enacted, like when the gay marriage in California was taken out. That was religion.
And I think Arkansas and Tennessee actually have laws that say in order to be an elected official that you have to be a...
religious.
I don't think... couldn't say Christian, but they say, you know, some...
a man
religion.
Of God.
Yeah, or something like that. And also, to prove further that this is a secular document, that they talk about... I can't find anything in here while I'm trying to talk and look through this, but it talks about... in the Constitution, it talks about swearing people in for office, and it said that the oath shall be, I swear, which is a religious oath, but it says, I swear or affirm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which means you can...
you don't have to go the religious route.
Because you've seen those movies, like from the 20s and 30s, you put your hand on a Bible, and you say, I swear, you know, that I shall, you know, like that. And which has been was declared unconstitutional a long time ago. So now they say to you, when they're swearing you in as a witness, they said, you swear or affirm to tell the whole truth. So you don't even have to say, because one of the things, if you were going to be a witness, or say you were defending yourself, and they'd say, do you swear before God to tell the whole truth? And you say, I don't believe in God. I'm not. Well, you're gone. You're toast.
You know, I used to be married, and the first time I got married in Vegas, and I didn't realize I went to.
That was the guy you knew for 24 hours?
No.
That was another guy.
No. Got married in Vegas. Making things up. I did. And so we went to the little white chapel where you can do the drive up wedding and everything. We go in there, and you know, I'm an atheist at that point, and out comes this woman doing the religious thing, okay? The minister or the lady who was. I don't know, whatever you call it.
Yeah.
Leading the wedding, yeah. And so I think, oh, man, this is just, okay, so we're legally married, whatever, but it still felt kind of weird about it. So I said, okay, let's do this. Let's renew our vows in Jamaica. And I said on the little piece of paper, no religious person. They sent over a Jamaican priest. So I really feel like I was never married. Because it wasn't my bag, man.
All right. Let's see. Here is Mike. Mike's in Fenton. Hi, Mike. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're doing good.
Hi. Great.
Boy, we're having a lot of fun tonight, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yes, we are.
I just got some stuff for you. I believe in God. And I also have had prayers answered. But
you ever hear of coincidence?
Yeah, but let me explain.
Go ahead.
You were just talking about the Constitution.
Yeah.
Well, that's man's Constitution.
Yeah.
God's Constitution is the Bible. So men are going by men's Constitution, which look at where it's got us.
Yeah.
We're not doing very well by following after their Constitution. Maybe we need to switch over to the Constitution of the Bible.
Oh, my gosh. Listen.
How that works.
No.
Hold on.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. Let me go.
Just hang on.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. It won't take long. So I believe in God. And so when I pray, I've been reading the Bible for like 25 years and doing this. you know, in that. And way back when, I didn't know much. So I would pray. Well, I didn't read the Bible enough. I didn't know. Well, when you pray, you have to have a relationship with God. You got to believe what you pray is going to come to pass.
Well, that's a good idea.
Because if you don't believe him, then you're not really with him. You're just somewhere in between. But once you get to where you read the Bible and you can pray and you know you have a relationship with him and you really have faith, because what pleases God is faith. So
how do you know
operates
that?
By faith.
How do you
know
his
faith?
Now that I'm able to pray by faith, I get my prayers answered.
Like, what do you pray? What do you pray for?
Yeah, give me an answer of what your answer, your prayer that was answered.
Oh, so many of them. Jeez. I found out in the Bible that it says in there that, you know, he has made a woman for you and that kind of stuff. And so I read that, and then I prayed. Well, he brought me this wonderful woman. We've been married for 18 years. We got 6 beautiful kids.
Well, that's good. But what about coincidence? You know, I mean,
like you meet people in the produce section kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. But I hear, you know, there's no middle ground, though, Mike.
Yeah,
I mean, either you believe it or you don't.
Or you don't. And you know what the thing is, Peter, is like he's talking about going to the other constitution. There's a little thing, just a little bitty thing called separation of church and state. And the founding fathers set that up so that the church would never take things over again. But what's happening right now is that the religious state is seeping into the governmental state.
And if you want one nation under God, Iran.
Yeah, have a good time over there.
All right, Mike, thank you.
We got an interview from Nick. And an interview, jeez.
I'm taking care of you today.
That's good. Yeah. I need you tonight. Nick wrote in and said, I wanted to tell you something my grandfather said about religion that fits today and back when it was created. He said religion was created for people that were bored, to give them something to do when not working. Thanks. Thanks,
you know,
Nick.
Actually, I used to be religious, and I used to...
No, you weren't.
I was. I actually... God spoke to me one time.
Oh, God.
It's true.
When?
I used to pray that I could win the lottery.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And it never...
So, I went to church every Sunday, and I said, God Almighty, please let me... I want the money so bad. I could use it for so many good things. I could attract a wonderful woman. I could, I could be the envy of my neighbors.
You could have a yacht.
Please. And every week I went and I prayed and please let me win the lottery.
So unlike you.
And then finally, I was so, I was like Job. I said, God, why have you forsaken me? Why won't you let me?
Well, that was Job. Okay.
Why won't you let me win the lottery? And this big voice came down. Peter, meet me halfway. Buy a ticket.
Oh, God. Where'd you get that one?
It's an old stupid joke. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julian Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julian will be taking more of your calls right after this. Join 101 The Rib at Parkway Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram on Hall Road just west of Grosbeck in Clinton Township today from 5 to 7 p.m. Test your skills and you could walk away with $10,000 in cold hard cash. It's all going down at Parkway Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram with 101 WRIF. The Rib.
So we're back and we got some more music coming up in just a second. But first, this news just came in. Right now, the government and private banks are liquidating houses. Now, these are homes that have been foreclosed, confiscated, or repossessed, and they may be sold for little or no money down. Here's a toll-free number so you can find out how to get a free list of these foreclosures. 1-800-923-1051. 1-800-923-1051. It says here, every house must be sold. The government and banks are very motivated to sell these homes, and they may be sold for little or no money down. Looks like there's currently over 400,000 foreclosures in the database being liquidated now. Homes may be sold for little or no money down. Ask how you can get a free list of these foreclosures by calling Hot Props at 1-800-923-1051. Call 1-800-923-1051. That's 1-800-923-1051.
Our son would go from, "Good morning, Mom," to words you'd never expect to come out of your child's mouth.
Our pain came from not knowing what to do. He was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia. 5 or 6 years later, he was diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder. I think the hardest part of living with someone who has a mental illness is thinking that you're alone, that no one else could understand. NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, is made up of people who live it every day. We lean on each other and we learn from each other. NAMI doesn't let anyone give up hope. My name is Mary Tadikin, and I can tell you what NAMI has meant for my family. It has meant that we are a family.
1 in 5 adults lives with depression, schizophrenia, anxiety, or other mental illnesses. NAMI provides education and support to these families and individuals. To find a local chapter, go to NAMI.org or call 800-950-NAMI.
Yes. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
You cannot petition the Lord with prayer!
Well, people at the Detroit prayer event that were downtown praying and fasting said we can't. Well, go for it. But I don't know. No one ever explained this to me. I'm not going to give you a hard time if you call up. And for one thing, if God is so powerful, why does he have to be worshipped? I don't get it. Anyways, what do I know?
Just a couple of things. A
couple of things, and I can guess the rest.
We did get an email from, it says Sinisterb, and it said, swap Satan with God. Does the Bible make more sense now? And he says, God told me there were weapons of mass destruction. Why would he lie? He's God, right? No, he's Satan. By the way, he said he's an atheist. He doesn't believe any of that crap, and he thinks we're fantastic.
Okay.
Thank you.
But, you know, one of the things, and she may be listening, where I know these wonderful Christian people.
We say this all the time.
We have to, because she always says, I know you're not talking about me.
We're not talking about you.
Yeah, right. Okay.
No.
No, we're not. Here is Tristan in Dearborn. Hi, Tristan. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter and Jolene.
Hi.
Tristan, hi.
As far as the whole prayer vigil thing goes, okay.
That what thing?
What?
Prayer thing?
Prayer thing, thank you.
Okay.
Oh, the prayer weekend, the big gathering.
Yes.
Yeah, prayer event, yeah.
I had a friend that went down there, and my friend is a certified Wiccan practitioner, such as I am. Both of us have been practicing since we were 8 years old. And
young.
Yeah. I'm actually, personally, myself, I'm on the course to become a high priest in that, which is kind of interesting. I have a family member that is a certified high priestess.
Huh.
In Wicca, which is
pagan.
Pagan, yeah.
Yep, for those who don't actually know what the pagan part is, it's actually Celtic witchcraft.
It's a lovely little religion. I love pagans. Yeah. I love Wicca. You're not a bad witch. You're a good witch. Let's put it on layman's terms here.
Yeah.
Yeah, because everything that I do is revered around the earth and the energies of the earth.
Beautiful.
Yep. Well, he was down there, and he almost got into a physical confrontation with somebody when they found out that he was a Wiccan practitioner.
Uh-oh. He was part of Baal, B-A-A-L. That they were trying to divorce Baal, the demon spirit, drive him out of the D.
Yeah. And one of the things that does kind of irk me about all this is, you see, all these people of this faith, I'm not going to say it out loud, who get together and they denounce and start bashing on all the other religions and everything and say that this is the one and true way. This is all that you have to do. If you believe this is what you're going to get. This is all the belief of Satan.
Well, that's why I like the Tao Te Ching, the T-A-O-T-E.
The Taoism?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the
I like
Taoist philosophy.
Too.
Yeah, which the first line of it is... it's interpreted from the Chinese in different ways. It said, that which says it is the way is not the way.
Love it.
Yes.
Deep.
All right, Tristan, thank you very much.
Thanks,
appreciate
Tristan.
It.
Good luck
thank
on
you
your
for your call. Pass. And let's see. Here is John in Clinton Township. Hi, John. You're on the air.
How you guys doing?
We're doing.
Good. Hi, John.
I was listening to you guys talk with that other caller about saying that the Bible needs to be the new constitution because, man's constitution isn't working or whatever.
Yeah.
I personally believe that's pretty silly. I don't believe in God myself. I'm not religious. But, you know, to Jordan, the idea that you would cut him down so fast, really without hearing him and, you know, laughing at him, in my opinion, and I don't, like I said, I don't believe in God either, that sort of makes you just as bad as him.
Oh, you mean because, me? Jolene?
Oh, Jolene. Yeah. Oh, I'm thinking, who's Jordan?
Who's Jordan?
Yeah. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Jordan and Werby.
Okay, so you thought I was a little, harsh, huh?
Oh, well, you know, I'm pretty harsh on religion myself. And
okay.
There's plenty of things that I feel is ridiculous, but...
Then why are you on me about it?
Well, I was just thinking, you know, like you were laughing at the guy, and instead of hearing him out, you know?
No, I didn't need to hear much more than let's take the other constitution and swap it with the religious constitution, meaning the Bible. Are you kidding me?
And also, John, it's a sad fact of life. Talk radio is not fair. In fact, can often be cruel.
Yeah. We can be
I definitely know that. I hear you.
We can be a little quick.
Let me tell you this. If I think his name was John. If I met John, well, I guess he wouldn't be in a bar. Why do I always think when I meet people, I meet him in a bar? Anyway,
we wouldn't be at a protest.
We're going to meet him at a library. I would be much more interested in hearing every single thing he has to say. And I would even give him a half hour, 45 minutes.
Wow.
I might not say a word because I don't have any, you know, I've got a lot of forums to speak my mind. And so when I'm doing interpersonal thing, you know, if I meet somebody in person, I'm all right with letting them talk their whole thing out if I don't agree with them, because one of the things is you don't, if you immediately start disagreeing with somebody, like, how can you prove there's a God? You know, well, then.
Like I apparently did.
Yeah. Then you're right. You don't even get to hear it fully. But, you know, at some level, this, I don't want to call this entertainment because we're serious as can be about the ideas that we're talking about, and I can't begin to tell you how serious I think the period that we're living in now, where history could be made. This could wind up to be just because the launch of this Occupy movement, which the physical form of it, occupying space, may even go away, but the confrontation of money power, the misrule by the 1%, the fact that democracy has been so eroded by elite control, could mean that we're in a period similar to the 1960s or the 1930s or other periods
of social change
and fermentation. So I'm extraordinarily serious about everything that goes on. On the other hand, I'm not going to let somebody talk for 20 minutes, even whether they agree with me or don't agree with me or, you know, with Jolene.
Mm-hmm.
And like right now, I'm going to say goodbye to you without even giving you a chance to say anymore.
We have to move on. Opportunity.
Here's Bob in Utica. Bob, hi, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing?
We're good.
Hi, Bob.
Hi. I'm not a theologian, and I am a Christian. And, you know, just like you say, we cannot prove that there's a God. Christians cannot prove it, but you can't prove that there isn't.
Well, you don't have to prove
anything.
Anything.
Why can't it just be in your heart?
Yeah. Well, no, that's not what I was. I was thinking going back to the logical proofs.
Okay.
You can't prove a non-theorem. I mean, I don't. I mean, I can't prove there's not ghosts. I can't prove there's UFOs. I can't prove. You know, it's up if someone makes an assertion. If they put forth, particularly something that's at the fundamentals of human existence, not up to me to prove it ain't so.
Right. But there were many non-Christians, and I can't come up with the names right now, but they were, you know, back in his day, you know, they witnessed him, and they, you know, they knew he existed. Jesus did these great things in raising the dead. And that wasn't the main point I wanted to
go ahead.
It was when you were talking about, you know, separation of church and state.
Yeah.
And actually... Well, they published the Bible in Congress. They said long hour prayers prior to opening of Congress. There was required reading of the Bible in the public schools at one time.
There was.
These were people that wrote the Constitution. They knew what they were putting it in there. They wouldn't have contradicted what they put in there.
Well, great numbers of the so-called founding fathers were what they called deists, that believed that there was some supernatural power that kind of knocked things into existence, but then had no further effect on human affairs, and that beseeching or worshiping meant nothing. But the main concern they were, remember, the Constitution is a political document, and the Founding Fathers wanted separation from this this nation that was ruled by church and state. And that's why the First Amendment to the Constitution says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. That was their main concern, the first concern they had. It wasn't freedom of speech, freedom of press, your right to assemble for redress of grievances or anything like that. The main thing they wanted to make sure was that the church, any religion, stayed out of the public affairs of the people of the United States. And you know what? It doesn't hurt anyone when it doesn't, because all of the religious people I know are just fine to go to their churches or go to their synagogues or go to their mosques or go to their temples.
They don't want to involve it in politics.
Yeah,
they just want to go.
Yeah, because what you start having, I mean, the Founding Fathers saw the corrupting influence that religion had on the political state and the corrupting influence the political state had on religion. So it does just fine in that manner. And these guys were geniuses that put this together. And I don't see any reason to contradict it. I mean, there's all sorts of contradictions of it, and I would say violations of it. Mm-hmm. That's what we live with. All right. Thank you.
FFRF.org, the Freedom From Religion Foundation. I'm not saying this is all about separation of church and state, basically. Check it out, and you can find more out.
Here's Vel. Vel is in Novi. Hi, Vel. You're on the air.
Hey, Jalene. Hey, Peter. How you doing?
Hi.
I just wanted to say I listen to you guys pretty much every week, and you guys are awesome. So.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
He didn't say awesome.
I just wanted
awesome.
To talk about awesome. religious stuff that you're talking about.
Yeah, what do you think?
Well, I personally think that Bible's full of crap because it was written by man. So, but
I also think
that there's some truth to it, but I think all religions only have a little bit of the truth.
Well, there's good things like treating people well and that kind of thing. There are some good
things.
Well,
there are. I did want to.
Don't do your neighbor unless it's an open marriage, you know. Wasn't that in there?
Well, when John was talking, I was looking up. I couldn't remember with Leviticus, which has all these rules, you know.
That one's kind of.
Yeah, and they also have these books of the Bible that are called the Apocrypha. You know, there's a word when you're saying somebody is telling you a story you don't particularly believe, that's an apocryphal story, sort of made up. Well, they have the Apocrypha, and it's all these books of the Bible, including many about Jesus, that these group of guys, these Catholic Church leaders, got together, when was it, like the 7th century or something like that, and said, these aren't going to be in our Bible. They're a little too weird.
Wow.
Yeah, like Jesus taking people out with a beam from his third eye and stuff like that. Yeah, for real.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that one's fun, though.
I like that one, yeah. They laughed at it. You know, it was like
awesome.
War of the Worlds. Remember robot would do that?
Sure.
All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call.
Thanks for your words.
Yeah. Here is Tricia in West Bloomfield. Tricia, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I've been a long-time listener and a first-time caller here. This actually really, really invited me to call in because, Mike, the guy that thinks that we should be following, quote, God's Constitution.
Yeah.
That's terrifying.
Isn't it?
The idea that there are people out there that think that way, and I know that there are, but the group think that follows that, the amount of people that agree with him is absolutely terrifying.
Well, Tricia, what happens to women in political states dominated by religion?
Well, I'm a lesbian too, so.
You're through.
I'm done. Yeah.
You will be stoned to death.
You are already in hell.
Yeah.
Exactly. The idea that there are so many people out there that agree with him, I appreciate anybody who can have faith in today's society. Okay, that's great in any religion, whatever. But have your faith for you and your conversations with God for you. Leave me out of it.
Well, I know. And yes. When and so many throughout history, and that's why that prohibition in the Constitution was put in there about, that there shall be no law respecting the establishment of religion, was because immediately these religious folks try to create laws that are based on their religion. Like you said, you're a lesbian, and for a long time, you were illegal.
I technically am. No doubt.
Yeah, and you can't. In fact, it was the religious folks that put the disgraceful amendment to the Michigan Constitution that bars same-sex marriage. And this came about, that was in 2008. So this was a landslide for a liberal president, or at least who was conceived of as liberal, Barack Obama. Yet, a lot, religious people were out there voting for Obama and voting to make you a second-class citizen.
And I think part of it, too, that the whole life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, my pursuit of happiness is not going to be in line with yours. Let me have that. That's all I'm
saying. Yeah, and also, like I say, I don't really care if anybody believes in any spirituality. When you start, as you're saying, when you start having it shape public policy, when it's in your face all the time,
completely discounts people because of their sexuality.
Not good.
Not good.
Yeah. Trisha, thank you. Appreciate your call. Here is Greg in Auburn Hills. Greg, hi. You're on the air.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're doing
Greg,
good.
Greg, hi.
I was listening. I'm a long time listener and I'm a long time caller. And I was listening to the guy about the religion, but he said that you got no proof that there is a God. Okay, that's fine. But if you listen to our, you look back, okay, you got Jim Jones and Ghana.
Yeah.
You got Waco. Okay, it's all about faith, what people believe.
Oh, and like that one guy.
Well, there are some things, too, like the Crusades and the Inquisition, the great burnings when hundreds of thousands of women were burned to death because they were thought to be witches during the Middle Ages. Went into into the 18th century, all done by the good religious folks that were trying to assure that the devil did not have intercourse, as they called it, in human affairs.
There's the devil, too.
Yeah, yeah.
You'll find out.
Yeah.
What did he say?
I don't know.
What's the devil?
Never mind.
Get married, you'll find out.
Yeah, there you go.
Hey, dude, I've been there. I know.
Yeah. Here's Regina in East Point. Hi, Regina. You're on the air.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi, Regina.
Hi, Brent. Oh, my God.
How are you?
You know what? I got a wake-up call today. My friend, because I was crying so hard because
take a deep breath.
Okay.
Baby formula.
Okay. Yes, the baby formula. You know what? He told me, no, people aren't that desperate. It's for cutting cocaine.
Baby
formula.
What is that stuff called? Begins with an M. They use it to, it's a baby laxative,
and they cut
cocaine with it.
10 years ago, I used to know this.
You know what, I'm going, he told me that tonight. I go, well, that's good, because not all these people don't have money to buy baby formula, and they're stealing it.
So it's mannitol.
They're stealing it, so they put it behind the counter.
Yeah.
So you have to ask for it, and they get it for you.
Yeah.
Well, and he told me that at like 11:15, and then we called your, I'm going, well, that's good that people can't afford baby formula. It's just being stolen by cocaine
Well,
wait. But here, mannitol, which they use to, take pure cocaine and then cut it, so it's not 100%.
Doesn't it stretch it out?
It stretches it out, yeah. So, but it's baby laxative. It's not.
Yeah, so it makes you.
Yeah. So it's not baby formula. They're not stealing from the babe. So that is one aspect of the world that you could probably reduce
your stress
concern
about. Yeah.
All right, Regina, I got to go. Thank you.
Have a good
week.
Appreciate
your call. Well, coming up at, it's 12:52, yeah. So in about 8 minutes, mm-hmm. It's Greg Palast, P-A-L-A-S-T. You can go to gregpalast.com, get a little preview of it all.
Yeah, he's a great journalist. He writes for The Guardian in London, and he's not allowed to write for any papers here because, like you said earlier, he speaks the truth.
Yeah.
He's amazing. Definitely go to his website.
You know, and it's not he just won't get hired. I mean, that's what I don't understand. I mean, most of the talk radio and cable and the network news are so boring. And they could get this guy. Yeah, they could get this guy on there, and it would just be absolutely phenomenal.
You know, I remember the day when I used to be really into CNN. I remember that. You know, it was a lot of years ago.
Yeah.
Now, I don't even know the numbers. I don't even know where to find that as well on my television. Are you proud of me? I've come a long way. Thank you, Peter. Definitely. You watch more TV than I do now.
Well, I have gotten hooked. I can't believe this, that I've gotten hooked on this Boardwalk.
HBO?
Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah, well, you know, I think you do go out and you can let loose and have a good time, but I think it's good for you just to kind of,
zone out once in a while. The only two things I watch is that and Hung.
Oh,
Hung
yeah.
is about a Detroit male prostitute who's a suburban gym teacher.
I would love to see that. I don't have HBO.
And it's called Hung because... Yeah. Yeah. And so it's got all these great shots of Detroit. It opens up. He's walking by the Joe Louis Fist.
Cool.
And Lafayette Coney Island.
Nice.
He's the Lido Motel on Rated 8 Mile in Woodward.
Oh, I know that one. I mean, I've never stayed there, but I drive by it. That's the one you can get by the hour, can't you?
You tell me.
I don't know.
That's where you can get your mannitol.
Stretching it out at the Lido.
Yeah, and they shot some of Hung in Royal Oak, right at the corner of what would it be, Lincoln and Washington.
Wow.
You know, and there is a Thai place there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the headquarters of where the service is, what do they call it? Something like a happiness service where the male prostitutes run out.
I wasn't following you. Now I get it. The happy ending kind of thing? Or,
that's
massaging.
Are we still on the air? Yeah, we are. All right. That's it. Sarah, thank you. Athena, thank you. We will have, we figured it all out finally. I think we'll have our podcast ready to roll. We've been doing it most of the time.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, we actually never, there was a
sometimes
couple.
They change equipment in there and we don't know what they've
done.
Yeah,
that's what did it. That's what sunk everybody.
I mean, we love you, engineering. You keep us up and running, but tell us, please.
Yeah, here, this is, let's see, Dave who's listening. Oh, in Davenport, Florida. And who listens to the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, unfortunately, I live in Florida.
Oh, just politically?
Well,
you
live there. I don't know. I did not get your show live. I do wait with bated breath for your podcast each week, which I must say is always posted quite a bit earlier than the noontime advertised.
Well, and good. That's because Jeremy's on it back then.
Yeah,
we appreciate that.
Is. Jeremy is doing a great job. But anyways, he's got a long thing, which I don't think... do you really think the right wing is serious with the candidates they have out there? Do you think they would rather lose the 2012 election, the presidential election, so Obama can continue to field the blame for the mess this country is in? Yet you would really wonder, why in the world would they want to be president?
Anyone.
Because they also will be a one-term president.
Taking it all on.
If they, because they have no...
Because they're evil.
They have nothing.
Val, who called in earlier, but he also wrote us, he said, Christians forget that Jesus died for their sins, making the Bible and their sins obsolete. Thanks. Okay.
We're going to do our interviews right now. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. And
talk
we'll
to
do
you
it
next
again
week.
Next week.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Do you know someone who's having a birthday this month? Don't let the date sneak up and catch you unprepared. Have ProFlowers send beautiful birthday flowers. They make flower deliveries easy and affordable. And get this incredible radio special. Yours right now. 100 stunning birthday blooms plus a free glass vase for just $19.99. Play it smart. Go online to ProFlowers.com. Look for the microphone in the upper right corner and enter the secret code FAST. Why overpay at a florist when you can get huge savings on one full 100 stunning birthday blooms for just $19.99 at ProFlowers? They'll even throw in a free vase. With a deal like this, you can take care of all the important people in your life and schedule that special birthday delivery weeks in advance. But hurry, this $19.99 birthday deal won't last forever. And the only way to get it is to go to ProFlowers.com. Look for the microphone in the upper right corner and enter the secret code FAST. One more time, write it down. ProFlowers.com. Secret code FAST. Got it? ProFlowers.com. Secret code FAST.
How do you get the most satisfaction? For some career-minded people, it's when they work toward a goal and reach it. The same may apply to you when preparing for your career. In fields like electronics technology, information technology, and drafting and design, you need knowledge and skills to get started. That's why you should call ITT Technical Institute. At ITT Tech, you can develop knowledge and skills to pursue opportunities in a variety of career fields. Call 800-741-5123. ITT Tech's program are designed to help you develop skills and knowledge to pursue your career interest. Classes and day or evening courses meet just a few days a week, and financial aid's available for those who qualify. So pick up the phone right now and call ITT Tech for more information. Call 800-741-5123. 800-741-5123. That's ITT Tech. 800-741-5123. For important information about these programs, go to programinfo.itt-tech.edu.
Is this on? Thank you. All right. Good morning, students. This is your principal speaking. Please listen closely to the following schedule changes. First period will be replaced by sleeping in. Second period will be replaced by warm weather. Third period will be replaced by belly flops. Fourth period will be replaced by goofing around. Fifth period will be replaced by batting leadoff. But there will be no changes to lunch. It will be in session every day.
School may be out for summer, but lunch is always in session. If your kids rely on subsidized school meals, call Gleaners Community Food Bank of Southeastern Michigan at 1-866-GLEANER or visit feedingamerica.org/summermeals.
A public service announcement brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. There's a guest that I've had on the air any number of times on this show, on my nationally syndicated show. He's just one of the best. He's an investigative reporter, and I sincerely believe this. If this American man was able to have the role that the major networks give to their news staff or to the cable news, our history might even be different. Because if Greg Palast was able to be what he should be, featured prominently in the United States rather than featured prominently in Britain, and we can talk about that as well, this would mean the door would be open for other people to, get this, folks, tell the whole truth. It's not so often that the major networks lie. It's just the whole story isn't there. And Greg Palast, P-A-L-A-S-T, and you go to gregpalast.com, I lost my train of thought there. In fact, I'll get out of it this way. Greg Palast, welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
Peter, it's a thrill. I feel like I'm back home.
That's good. Yeah, I just was looking for a list of your books, and my favorite, and I still use the title all the time, is, in fact, all the titles are just right there. And the last one that we interviewed you about was Armed Madhouse, and then the other one was The Best Money Democracy Can Buy. That Greg Palast.
I'm going to have to correct you. The Best Democracy Money Can Buy.
What did I say?
The Best money democracy close. It's a tongue twister.
You know what?
And it's a brain twister.
I've been doing this for a long time. I get excited every time I know that I am going to talk to you, and that's why I made the mistake. When you listen to Greg Pallas, when you read his book, and his brand new one, it's called Vulture's Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores, you wind up going, wow, I can't believe it. Incredible. That's the response. And the best democracy money can buy had that. I mean, Greg was the first person to expose how George W. Bush, through the Secretary of State of Florida, stole the 2000 election. But a brand new book. I'll do this. Greg, you go ahead. Tell me what your book's all about, and I'll calm down. How's that?
It's the 1%. Down at Occupy Wall Street, they say, we're the 99%. Well, no one's against Wall Street. That's a street address. This is about the 1% who are the movers and shakers, who are kind of moving and shaking us. And this is good old-fashioned gumshoe investigative reporting and detective work, something not done in the USA, I guess against Patriot Act 3, Peter. And it is – so I go after – the high finance guys and show you, get inside them and talk to them. By the way, journalism students listening, try ex-trophy wives. They're angry. They bring their files. They bring the pillow talk. I get inside these guys' lives, the lives of the rich and shameless. And then I also track down over four continents, I mean, from Africa to Asia to the Amazon jungle, in fact, up through to the Arctic Circle, tracking down what really happened with British Petroleum and the Deepwater Horizon, those 11 guys incinerated. Then Fukushima blows up, and I'm off to Japan to find out what they won't tell you about radiation salesmen, including, for example, that the first new nuclear plant that will be built in the United States will be built by those wonderful guys at Tokyo Electric Power. But so basically it is old-fashioned gumshoe investigative reporting. You follow me on the trail, including my failures, like, you know, because about once a week I lose the James Bond Award, you know. But, you know, from my arrests in Azerbaijan, if you don't know where that is, don't panic. Americans don't know where these nations are.
No, they don't.
The second airport arrives there, right? Mogadishu. Whoever heard of Mogadishu? Anyway, so that's the story. It's inside the 1%, their lives, their bribes, their beatings, their, who they buy, who they bloody up, how they got their billions.
Well,
so it's the story of billionaires.
If the media was really up to its task in the United States, which it is not, Greg Pallas, and tell me if you agree, Greg, would be one of 200 instead of one in a million, right?
Well, I mean, I have to say, I am.
That's not to take away your skills. Yeah.
No, I'm the regular news guy on BBC television, which is the biggest news network in the world, and the Guardian paper, the big worldwide English newspaper, like considered the big one. And so I'm just the guy that you see, you know, nightly news. And all the rest of the planet, except my own country, I just came back from hunting down one of these vultures from Vulture's Picnic, actually from the book. I'm still working my day job. I was just in the Congo last week and a few days before in Sarajevo, Bosnia, hunting down. Deepest, darkest Brooklyn, the real heart of darkness here.
There you go.
Going after some billionaire who's bleeding the Congo dry through a scam he worked by bribing the prime minister of Bosnia. And he comes back and he takes billions out of the U.S. And, of course, he doesn't have to pay taxes because, you know, oh, by the way, I'm thinking of changing the book's name from Vulture's Picnic to Job Creator's Picnic because, as you know, the new myth is that these guys are job creators. I want you to meet the job creators. You know, there was a cholera epidemic in the Congo. This guy's taken $100 million. He blocked the payments of the Congo. He takes their aid money. And I want to show you how these guys do it.
Well,
I want you to meet him.
Well, sure. And can we put names on these folks?
Yeah, okay. Number one, you know who the number one donor to the Republican Party is since Ken Lay shunted his mortal coil? His name is Paul the Vulture Singer.
And nobody knows who this man is.
But he's the new number one. Okay, they didn't know who Ken Lay was until one of the people exposed him. So I'm exposing the next one, Paul the Vulture. I didn't name him the Vulture. Even his own bankers he works with call him the Vulture, and I think his mother calls him the Vulture.
Ken Lay, by the way, we should say, was the head of Exxon. Not Exxon.
Enron.
Enron, yes. Right.
And so
Paul the Vulture Singer, okay, what he did was, for example, he grabbed all these busted out asbestos companies like Johns Manville. They had killed their workers, and the executives were found out having let the workers inhale asbestos. They're dying, drowning in their own fluids. It's a horrible way to die. So the companies agreed that they would give all their profits to their workers. They went through bankruptcy. So, of course, the companies were worth next to nothing. He bought them for peanuts. Not even elephants would eat it, those peanuts. Bought it with peanuts. Then he uses his influence with George Bush, who personally starts at, you know that George Bush personally called the people filing asbestos claims, he said 95% of them were liars, frauds. That's Bush, okay? He uses that connect to change the law so that people can't collect. Now these companies, these cancer machines, are worth billions. He pockets the money. So on a bet of next to nothing, he pockets personally $1 billion. Guy's worth about $4 billion right now. That's our job creator. I mean, maybe making caskets or something is the job he's creating. Then he goes to the Congo, all right? And through flim-flam and frauds, these guys grab a hold of old forgotten debts of these nations, sues them while they're in the middle of a civil war, and then seizes all their assets on the high seas. You say, well, that's sad. That's the Congo. What can you do? The answer is the U.S. taxpayer forgave billions of dollars in debt to these nations. And what's not shown, Bush did that. Bush really cared about Africa. You know what he did? He got the U.S. taxpayer out of the way so his biggest donors could go and seize the money. Now, just so you know how I find this stuff out, and that's the point of Vulture's Picnic. It's not just here's more stories. It's like, you know, like those books, I mean, nice, like Pigs at the Trough, or even my own book, Best Democracy Money Can Buy. For the first time, you're with me on the investigation and my sidekick, Miss Bad Penny. That's really her name. And she does all her undercover, you know, all our undercover work. And you know, actually, she does look like a Bond girl. And that's part of the game that has to be played. And so, for example, we find out that one of the vultures who works with Paul Vulture Singer and one of his buddies, one of the vultures has bribed the president of Zambia in Africa.
Uh-huh.
We follow the president of Zambia to Geneva, Switzerland, where he's sticking the money, of course, in a Swiss bank account. But he stops at a boutique along the way in Switzerland and spends $1 million in a couple hours at this boutique buying 200 pairs of elevator shoes. He's a short dictator. And a diamond-studded tie, okay? And, of course, Bad Penny goes in. She speaks four languages, and so she's speaking French and then switches to local German. And says, you know, oh, we're filming a show called, you know, Shopping by the Rich and Famous, something. Anyone come in here interested? You know, they'd say, oh, yeah, the president of Zambia was just here. And we film his discussion of spending the $1 million. This is a guy whose official salary is like $80 a month as president of Zambia. Now, of course, who gave him the money? So we track that down. We track down the guy who actually gave him the money is a vulture named Goldfinger. This is the real Goldfinger, not the James Bond one. The James Bond one is kind of like a Girl Scout compared to the actual true life Goldfinger, okay? Hunt down Goldfinger in Washington, D.C., come up with the evidence and confront him with the evidence of the bribes and the ripoffs, including the ripoff of the U.S. taxpayer. And I have to say that you'll see in the book, that has almost a happy ending because I also slipped this information to your local congressman, John Conyers.
Okay, here in Detroit,
Mr. Detroit.
Yeah.
And Mr. Detroit literally took my story, my evidence, into the Oval Office, the White House, and slapped it on Bush's desk in the Oval Office, Conyers, and said, I want, you know, this guy's stealing AIDS money for Africa that we Americans have paid for. Kids are dying. We lose our money. It's your buddy. And, of course, Bush said, I don't know anything about it, which was his line for everything, right? He doesn't know anything about it. And Conyers said, now you do. And it's against the law. It's a felony crime. What are you going to do about it, Mr. President? So Bush pretended to do something. The FBI came around to talk to me about it. But you know what? The game continues. At least Conyers got upset, and got upset for the right reasons. It's
sure.
A crime, it's our money, and it's kids dying. This is the 1%. This is the... Right?
Right. Well, let me reintroduce you. Greg Palast is my guest, and what we're talking about is a brand new book, a Greg Palast investigation. It's called Vulture's Picnic. You can go to vulturespicnic.org, gregpalast.com. That's P-A-L-A-S-T.com. The book is Vulture's Picnic in Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores. And, if someone was writing about me, Greg, this comment that appeared about you in BuzzFlash.com, Jack Kerouac meets Seymour Hersh. Seymour Hersh, of course, one of the great investigative reporters along, with yourself. Let bring it back a little. We were beginning, there's so much in Vulture's Picnic that you could almost, open it anywhere in the book, but, some of this stuff is gone from our memory. You were talking about, essentially what was the BP spill. That's not an isolated incident. That, in a way, it wasn't an accident in the sense that,
preventable.
Yeah. Tell us about how that ties into the Caspian Sea oil spill.
Yeah. Where's the Caspian Sea? It's like on the other end of the earth somewhere, right?
Right.
So the Deepwater Horizon blows up. I'm in Vegas with Bad Penny. I'm talking to a lawyer. He's looking grim. It's midnight. He says, they've just called me to get permission to open up a safety capsule floating in the sea. They think that 12 of my clients are in there cooked alive. They weren't. They were incinerated, in fact, vaporized at the Deepwater Horizon explosion. Right after that, I get a message from Asia, from a place, Azerbaijan, one of those Islamic republics pooped out by the Soviet Union when it collapsed. Ship floating, saying, this is not the first time that a BP rig has exploded like this. Boom. There's previous blowout in the Caspian Sea on the other side of the world for the same reasons. They use this cheap cement process. But so BP testified under oath in Congress before 6 months before the Deepwater Horizon, saying, oh, we've never had a problem with this stuff. I get this message. It happened once before. So they could have prevented it by not using the same cheap systems. That's a serious thing. We're going now from accident to homicide. So I end up having to get British networks pay for me to go undercover and go across the world to Azerbaijan. But someone's tipped off BP and the local Islamic dictatorship, which is run by the woman who has been voted officially the most sexiest Islamic woman in the world.
Okay.
It's true. Someone's, it's probably a rigged election. Esquire magazine. And so this kind of beauty queen dictator. I don't know if she's the most beautiful Islamic woman in the world, could be, or the most sexiest, but she is certainly the best dressed. She wears hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of jewelry, certainly most brutal. And I get caught out in the desert trying to film what's going on at BP. And we're under arrest. And, of course, the first thing they do, Peter, is take your film.
Sure.
Give us a film. They don't care about me. They'll just throw me out of the country. They can't have a diplomatic stuff because basically this is the Islamic Republic of BP. They own the country, the oil company, right? So they don't want any trouble. So they're going to throw me out. They'll take the film, except they forgot something. Bad Penny had given me one of those little Austin Powers pen cameras, a camera inside the pen. And so I got the evidence out that there was this prior explosion for the same reasons.
And you can see some of this video footage at vulturespicnic.org, correct?
That's right. In other words, I actually have some of the pen camera footage under arrest and some of the evidence there. And, again, these are not job creators. These are people killers. That's a rough way to put it, but, it sounds like it's a grim book. There's a lot of grim in it. But believe me, bribery, mayhem, beatings, arrests, people, ships blowing up, it can be a lot of fun.
wait a minute, though.
As an investigator.
What is this with Palast that we're talking to? Greg Palast, P-A-L-A-S-T. You can go to gregpalast.com. His new book is Vulture's Picnic. It's published by Dutton. Subtitle is In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores, a Greg Palast investigation. So you know there's going to be a lot there. It says Palast sex setup. This ought to be juicy. What happened?
Oh, well, that's part of the nuclear investigation. I find out. I'm investigating there's four companies designated to build new nuclear power plants in the U.S. that have been funded by we, the
taxpayers or tax suckers, whatever you want to call it. And one of the companies is Southern Company. I get inside documents from them. The senior vice president of the company, a poor guy named Jake, the company's caught making political payoffs. They say Jake's going to have to take the fall. Jake tells the chairman of the board, I'm going to blow the whistle to the attorney general, except he takes the company plane. 12 minutes after takeoff, kaboom, the plane blows up.
Oh.
Okay. So I have copies of some of the documents that blew up with Jake. You know, that's what photocopiers are for. And that's what I do as an investigator. I've got the stuff. Now they're partnering up with a Texas company. And the Texas company, same type of game. I have two, they've gotten money from us by saying they can build a nuclear power plant cheaply. I get something in the mail. I get the inside documents from the company. What do I find? That they've got two sets of books. One's a complete lie. So now I've got these two companies, and I go to Europe to blow the whistle on them because they're operating there. The first thing that they do is they take this deal where I'm trying to get some information. And I do whatever methods I need, Peter. And maybe not everyone agrees with them, but this is a very lovely woman, and I decided I would get close to her. Unfortunately, I didn't. And she was a rising politician in Britain. So I need the inside info, and I figure, you know, you get a lot of information if you're not wearing too much clothes, right? But
what do we say? It's a dirty job, but someone has to do it. Greg Palast,
right?
On the job. Thank you for being there for that part of it, Greg.
Yeah. So I did it for the team.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it was a setup, and I was caught with my zipper down, so to speak. So was she. She didn't realize that she was actually being used as bait for a setup. And so that was all over the front page of the British papers in an attempt to smear me. These nuclear operators wanted to smear me so that my information would be discredited. And so one of the reasons I put all this in the book is that they can't smear me because I'm giving you all the stuff right up front, full frontal palace. I mean, don't worry, you don't have any pictures. That'll make you gag.
Okay.
But I still have the documents. I have the material that Jake had in the plane when it blew up. I have the material from Houston, Houston Power and Light. And they can try to smear me, but it doesn't matter. I've got the info, and you should see it. And these are the guys, two of the four companies, that have been designated to build the next nuclear power plants.
Well, let's do this.
And then Fukushima blows up. So, you know, so these are the – so in other words, I take you with me on these investigations, good, bad, weird. You know, I'm inside – I literally – inside a whale in the Arctic to try to get information from the Eskimo chief, the big Eskimo chief up there at Etok. So that's, I just want you people to be with me on this investigation instead of my prior books where you just find out what I've learned.
Right, let's do this. We have about 5 minutes left, so we're going to, I mean, there is so much here. There's two ways we could go at Greg Palast. That's one, have like a 9-hour interview. The other way is to get his book, Vulture's Picnic, published by Dutton, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores. I'll have a link on my site as well. You know, Greg, given that you're an American, you have to have mostly depend on media outlets in Britain. It reminds me in an odd way of 6 Days of the Condor, that Robert Redford film, and also
yes,
this HBO series Rubicon, because at the end, both of the heroes, if you will, have information that they think is going to destroy the 1%, the elite, finally expose their crimes, and the kind of the elite just look at them and go, no, it won't. I mean, is information power? I mean, is there a way that this is going to, these incredible exposés that you bring us will have an impact?
I think that they do. And when I did the story of how Catherine Harris knocked off thousands of black folk off the voter rolls of Florida, calling them felons, and their only crime was voting while black, it at least set off a discussion that for the first time in America, people are realizing it ain't this, you know, it ain't this wonderful Frank Capra democracy where all votes get counted. And I think that when people see what's going on and find out what's going on, but Peter, if it weren't for your show and a few other courageous outlets that let this story go out, it was on the front page of the British newspapers, top of the nightly news, but in America it wasn't. So we get here, but we need people like Peter Werbe to get the word out. And it does have an effect. People start thinking about how elections can be manipulated and jacked with in the U.S. Here with these vultures, like, for example, there's a New York vulture. We stake him out. You'll see at the beginning of the book in a snowstorm. He finds out we're after him. This is a, you know, demi-billionaire. We rush to his office in New York. He's pulled the signs off. He's had those big plaques that they have at these office buildings, had the plaques unbolted and all traces of his company removed. And turns out he was hiding inside a locked office pretending that it had already been abandoned. Now, that will have an effect ultimately because the next day, by the way, after I broadcast that, these American Vulture Fund operators, including Paul the Vulture Singer, number one GOP guy, his business was outlawed in every nation in Europe and in China and in most of South America. It's only the U.S. that's remaining standing, allowing this type of trickery with our money. And it will come back here because there's actually going to be pressure from other European leaders saying, we're giving all this money to Africa, and your donors, political donors, are sucking it up. But I think that if people get these stories, it won't be just this one bad thing. Let's kill these vultures. Let's expose British Petroleum. Let's, you know, fix the election. It's the whole way the system works. And I just thought that rather than the usual listing of all the evils and ills, that I let people in on what I actually, to be very honest, even though my job is crazy, it's really a lot of fun in the end to do this type of investigation. So I thought I'd let you in on the fun as well as just the horrific evidence I find.
Well, what's incredible, and talk about 1%, usually we're talking about the elite of the elite here in this country. We have maybe talked about 1% of what is in Vulture's Picnic. I mean, I was looking at this list of things, and we don't have we got about 60 seconds left, so we don't have the time to talk about this proposed Canada to Houston pipeline, which is so important. But you know what? We are virtually out of time as I talk, and I asked Greg Palast just a second ago, did I think what he was exposing, what he let us know about was going to have an impact? The Chicago Tribune says, Palast stories so relevant that they threaten to alter history. Now, that you can't get a bigger compliment than that. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. said that Vulture's Picnic reads like a spy thriller, the last of the great investigative reporters, and that is a real shame. Greg Palast is such a unique treasure to let us know what's going on, and I know you agree with me 100%. There should be 500 Greg Palast. True?
Well, we need a team. And actually, if you go to gregpalast.com, you'll see some of the stories I filmed in Detroit because the vultures attack there too. And if you go to vulturespicnic.org, you can download the first chapter or read right on the site, the first chapter of the book, no charge. I got my capitalist publisher to agree to that because I think the information's important. And I think you'll have some fun. And I think that if people had some more fun with this, realize that information is power and not dull, the real stuff.
Well,
I think kids will enjoy it.
Thank you very much, and maybe backing that up, NPR in a review on air said, America's best investigative reporter and the funniest. And, again, you can go to vulturespicnic.org. The book is Vulture's Picnic in Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores. It's published by Dutton. You can go to Greg Palast, that's PALAST.com. There'll be a link on my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. Greg, as always, wonderful talking to you, and everybody should get the book.
You're the best. Thanks, Peter. I mean it.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
Mortgages should be illegal because you're getting robbed every month. With a typical $200,000 30-year mortgage, you'll end up paying over $400,000 after interest. Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. My proven system can eliminate your mortgage and all your debts. Let me send you a powerful free CD. For your free CD, call 1-800-933-2911. 1-800-933-2911. 1-800-933-2911.
Attention! If you're attempting to lose weight, please stay tuned for an important opportunity.
In a six-month clinical study, participants lost an average of 30 pounds without changing their eating habits or routine. Now Sensa is conducting a market trial in this listening area. If you're trying to lose weight, you are eligible to try Sensa free for 30 days. Call 1-800-714-9593 now to request your free trial. Participation in this free trial does not require any dieting, pills, or change in lifestyle. In fact, we only ask that you continue eating the foods you love. Just use clinically proven Sensa, the same weight loss breakthrough you've seen on Extra, Dateline NBC, and America's Newsroom. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. If you want to lose weight, you are eligible to participate in this market trial. For your 30-day free trial, you must call this number now. 1-800-714-9593. That's 1-800-714-9593. 1-800-714-9593.
1-0-1-0-1 WRIF.
What's up, everybody? This is Sully from Godsmack.
Hello, Motor City. This is Mike, the creative Pearl Jam.
Hello, Motor City. This is Jimmy Page from Led Zeppelin. Your radio is locked on 101 WRIF. If it rocks, it's on the roof.
Everything that rocks. That's the sound of people throwing out their old dehumidifiers. They've replaced them with the energy-saving Wave Ventilation Unit. Wave Ventilation expels moisture, gases, and toxins trapped in your basement or crawl space and replaces it with drier, fresher air. The computerized Wave Ventilation requires no maintenance. There are no buckets to empty, no filters to change. And compared to a dehumidifier, it will save you hundreds of dollars a year in energy costs. One customer wrote,
I was stunned by the difference. I had had a dehumidifier. Humidifier for almost 20 years without ever getting rid of that musty smell. And now that smell is finally gone.
Wave can transform your home into a drier, healthier environment. Satisfaction guaranteed. Find out more about Wave Ventilation right now.
For free information, go to goodairnow.com. That's goodairnow.com. Or call 1-866-324-9481. That's 1-866-324-9481.
Do you own a car you no longer want, and you don't have the time or energy to sell it? Donate your car to Heritage for the Blind. Your donation is tax deductible, and your car will be towed away for free. Call 1-800-943-1356. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, trucks, vans, and boats. It doesn't matter if your vehicle runs or not. Call now. Your donation will help those in need. Heritage for the Blind is a nonprofit organization that helps the visually impaired live fuller lives. Call now to donate your car, and as a special thank you, you'll receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to over 50 locations. Call Heritage for the Blind right now. Call 1-800-943-1356. Donating is easy, it's tax deductible, and your vehicle is towed away for free. Plus, you'll get a free vacation voucher by donating. Call 1-800-943-1356. 1-800-943-1356. Homeowners, how do you find the right contractor when you want something built? How do you find the best service professional when you need something fixed? For any type of service for your home, go to the most trusted website for pre-screened home pros. Just go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic is a free online resource that instantly connects you with pre-screened remodelers, maids, repairmen, and many other home contractors. If you need a plumber, electrician, painter, or any other home pro, visit fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's easy and it's free, and it's the smartest way to find neighbor-rated contractors in your area. Over 10 million homeowners have trusted Service Magic for their home improvement and maintenance projects. So hire a pre-screened home pro with confidence. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. fixitfast.servicemagic.com. That's fixitfast.servicemagic.com.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. When I say the name Kurt Vonnegut, I think that probably pops into everyone's mind as wonderful novels that we've read on our own and sometimes assigned in high school or in college. The man was an absolutely incredible writer, thinker, and was able to present our times in a way that that was reflective in a manner that I think needed to be. He, well, rather than me trying to fumble around describing Kurt Vonnegut, let's bring to our microphone the guest that has just written a book about Kurt Vonnegut. The book is called Unstuck in Time, A Journey Through Kurt Vonnegut's Life and Novels. And the author is Gregory D. Sumner. He's in the studio with me. And Gregory D. Sumner is the chair of history at the University of Detroit Mercy, just down the road from us, where he's taught since 1993 as a doctorate in American history. He's the author of the Dwight MacDonald and the Politics Circle, and Sumner has been awarded summer fellowships by the National Endowment for the Humanities, has twice been the William J. Fulbright Senior Lecturer at the, I'm going to get him to say that one for
Universita de Roma Tre.
Okay. Greg Sumner.
That's the extent of my Italian.
Okay. I wasn't even going to give it a whirl. Welcome to the broadcast. Now, you are the chair of the history department. I would have thought somebody that had written a book examining the life and the novels of Kurt Vonnegut in the book Unstuck in Time would have been from the English department. What's happening here?
Right. Well, Vonnegut liked unconventional backgrounds. He himself had an unconventional background as a writer. He was a scientist more than any product of an English department. But I'm coming at Vonnegut more as a biographer, more as a person who's interested in history. I think that Kurt Vonnegut will be read in future generations, future years, much as we read Mark Twain today. Of course, Vonnegut, he looked like Mark Twain. He was a humorist with a dark side like Twain. And the comparisons are often made. I was looking at Kurt Vonnegut not from a sort of narrowly literary perspective. And in fact, Vonnegut had trouble sometimes. He was with critics and people from English departments who didn't accept that a guy they felt had been sort of a hack writer in the 50s, had been in what he called the science fiction ghetto, and had a degree in chemistry, could be a writer. So, you know, I'm really coming at it. I don't use literary crit jargon. I'm coming at it as a man. I was interested in his amazing life almost more than his books. Vonnegut as a child of a place I know well. He's from Indianapolis, Indiana, which is where I'm from. That's probably my biggest credential to write about Vonnegut. He lived through the Great Depression. He lived famously through the Second World War. He saw the destruction of Dresden. He was a prisoner of war. And he dealt with all of the issues after the war that his generation, the greatest, he's a greatest generation figure, of course, became kind of a guru to the 60s youth. I find that he much transcends the 60s. I find that the course of his life from 1922 to 2007, it's a sort of epic journey. And although my book is about his books and how they interact with his life, I think I was almost more interested in the man. And Vonnegut always said, the most important character in all of my books is me. And he often had alter egos like Kilgore Trout and so forth. So I find Vonnegut throughout his books, beginning in 1952, Player Piano, 14 novels all the way to Timequake in 1997. And so I find him just this amazing figure who had this kind of Mark Twain-esque critical view of his society, but a deep patriot at the same time, a man who's often misunderstood today. I am not a typical Kurt Vonnegut reader or the stereotypical. We were talking about this, Peter. I was born slightly after you. I'm a baby boomer, but a late baby boomer. Okay. People tend to think, oh, yeah, he's a relic of the 60s. He's somebody that the counterculture embraced. But I find Vonnegut very fresh in 2011. I find 20-somethings reading him. I think he has legs. It's not kid stuff. And I'm coming really as an historian more than as a literary. He viewed his stories. He viewed writing as a mechanical process. He was a student of stories, and he taught writing. But he came from an unconventional background, and I think it's valuable to have somebody who's not just looking at it from a kind of literary perspective to talk about Kurt Vonnegut and how his life reflects the last 50 years plus, or 80 years, really.
Greg Sumner is my guest, and I'm calling him by the diminutive because that is his website.
Oh, sure.
Greg D. Sumner, SUMNER.com. There'll be a link on my website as well. The book is Unstuck in Time. It's published by the wonderful publishing house, Seven Stories. And a lot of people may relate to the title Unstuck in Time, but but explain it some for us.
Well, that's, of course, a famous phrase from Vonnegut's most famous book, 1969's Slaughterhouse-Five, which begins, Billy Pilgrim, a thinly veiled alter ego of the young Kurt Vonnegut as a prisoner of war during World War II. Billy Pilgrim is unstuck in time. To me, specifically to the book, Billy is a traumatized war veteran who sometimes in his life as a middle-aged person drifts back to moments of the war, drifts back to his childhood, advances to old age. He floats around in his consciousness. And Vonnegut really believed that that was kind of the human condition, that we don't live in a linear way. We live life in a very complex, kind of fractured way. And, you know, it took him 25 years to figure out how to write about the destruction of Dresden. He did it with a kind of sci-fi bend. Mm-hmm. Unstuck in Time has a little bit of a time travel element to it. To me, though, it really refers to how it's the human condition. We don't just live as kind of linear creatures. We are constantly refracting our experiences through memory. You know, the big show is inside our heads even more than what's happening to us sometimes at the time. So it has multiple meanings, Unstuck in Time.
I don't know if other listeners are getting this, but just as we talk about Greg Sumner's book, Unstuck in Time, A Journey Through Kurt Vonnegut's Life and Novels, they're beginning to tumble through my mind. And some of them I read decades.
Are you becoming unstuck in time, Peter?
Exactly. And Slaughterhouse-Five, and I think that's probably his most popular book.
Absolutely.
Made into an incredible movie, although I want to ask you about whether or not Kurt Vonnegut thought that as well. Mm-hmm. But that whole idea of every time there was a death, they would say, so it goes, even to the point where I remember that somebody had a beautiful leather belt, and he said, so it goes, because that was a life for that as well. And Kurt Vonnegut was certainly a humanist, in fact, an honorary president of the American Humanist Association, something I used to belong to. I didn't even know that.
Has your membership lapsed?
I'm a lapsed humanist.
That's tough to do. But
now you made me forget.
Okay.
What always came out of it for my early reading was the philosophy of existentialism, mm-hmm. that we we define life by our acts. Each moment when we choose, that we choose as though we were choosing making a universal choice. Did he embrace existentialism in that sense, or consciously?
Yeah, I never found the word existentialism in any of Vonnegut's writings or in his interviews or speeches. You could say he was a kind of existentialist. Basically, Kurt Vonnegut was an agnostic. He was raised to be an atheist, and he kind of believed that human experience, human institutions, religions, folk culture, these were created things. These were gadgets. He studied anthropology at the University of Chicago on the GI Bill after the Second World War. He studied the various cultures of the world, and he thought they were all more or less humanly created gadgets mm-hmm. that we use to create meaning and to give us guidance in our lives. Vonnegut was once asked, why are you rebelling against Christianity, or why are you rebelling against, conventional religion, organized religion? He says, I'm not rebelling against anything. This is what I was taught in my home. He was a fourth generation German freethinker, and his parents taught him that organized religion was not to be followed kind of blindly. So he was a lifelong agnostic. And so this gives him, and I think his life experiences, the randomness of what he saw, the traumas of the Great Depression, the randomness of death, you mentioned that he describes in Slaughterhouse-Five, the tragedies in his life, the strange course that his life and many other people's lives took. I think he really did believe, I don't know that there is a plan to this, but our job is to really, to be humanists, to help each other through whatever this thing is we're going through.
Who was it now? The Firesign Theater said, we're all, what are we? We're all something on this
bozos
bus.
Bozos on this
we're
bus.
We're all bozos on this bus, right? And I was thinking, we're all Tralfamadorians on this bus. Tell us about Tralfamadoria.
Well, Tralfamador is an extragalactic planet of machines, of robots, first introduced actually in Sirens of Titan back in 1959, and there are references to it throughout Vonnegut's work. Most famously in Slaughterhouse-Five, this is a place to which the middle-aged, traumatized Billy Pilgrim retreats when he's under moments of stress. And, you know, it brings up the whole issue of Vonnegut as a science fiction writer. He rebelled against that title in many ways. He said, "I use science fiction to create a detached perspective on our everyday lives, almost like an anthropologist would." He also said, "I use science fiction interludes in my books, almost like Shakespeare used clowns." There would be some heavy material, let's say the destruction of Dresden, and then maybe let's take a flight to Tralfamador and talk about how all moments exist at the same time. And, you know, Billy has a relationship with a beautiful woman and so forth. It's a sort of place of healing, a place of a different type of wisdom that could be found on terrestrial Earth. So, you know, in a way, most of Vonnegut's sci-fi devices are kind of throwaways. He was trained in science. He famously said once, "What makes me different from other writers I know is that I know how my refrigerator works." He studied mechanical engineering, chemistry. His father was an architect. He studied biology. He was immersed in science. He understood it. But the sci-fi stuff, I don't think he rebelled against being kind of in that ghetto, as he said. He was there in the 50s, until Slaughterhouse-Five, really.
Well, I don't want to dwell too much on existentialism.
Sure,
but,
sure.
But at the same time, I was reading existentialist novels and also, you know, nonfiction. I read The Sirens of Titan,
yes,
as well. And,
yes.
I mean, it certainly it certainly bolstered the idea that we lived in an absurd universe.
Yes.
And living an absurd life always probably sounds pretty terrible to people.
And that word absurd would be connected to existentialism. And I believe Vonnegut was existential in the sense that he did believe human existence was absurd on some levels.
And which meant that there was no overriding meaning. Is that, I'm forgetting all that. What is it? Something precedes essence.
No,
I know what it is. I want to get this.
I slept through that part of my philosophy class.
Right.
But you mentioned Sirens of Titan. That in that book, all of human history is directed at getting a spare part.
Right.
To a Tralfamadorian scout who's been marooned on Titan. So, it's absurd.
Who has a universal message, which is?
Greetings. It's the most banal possible message. Yet all of our great, so it's a mockery in a way, or a sort of teasing of human ego.
And all of history, in Vonnegut.
The Great Wall of China.
Everything was to get
there were
this,
messages to, this, the, to this get this part
yeah.
back. So, what if, and it sort of brings human beings down a couple of pegs. We have a problem. Shakespeare, the Greeks, they understood we had a problem with arrogance sometimes.
Its existence precedes essence. In
I
other
slept
words,
through that part.
We define ourselves.
Yes.
Now, how did Kurt Vonnegut relate, for instance, because he was writing in the same period, to the Beats, and how did the Beats writers relate to him? Was there any connection?
It's interesting. There wasn't much connection in the 50s, which I think of as kind of the heyday of the emergence of the Beats. Vonnegut was living a householder's life. He was supporting 3 and later 6 children when he adopted his dead sister's children, his nephews. He was trying to make a buck. He was cranking out stories. He was living in a ramshackle house in Cape Cod. He was not involved in any kind of countercultural activity in the 50s or the 60s. He was a World War II era guy with a job, and so I think he might have been sympathetic to some of the writings of the Beats, but he was not living that life, and he thought, he liked to write about the ordinary working guy who was just trying to make to survive. A lot of his books, I find, as I look through the course of his writings, are about the progress of the greatest generation, the men, the veterans who came back and tried to rebuild their lives after trauma. So he was not living this experimental life. He moved to New York in 1970 and spent the rest of his life there, and he was very excited by all the kind of activity there. But he had not much interest in counterculture or really even hippies. Kind of hippies would show up at his door after Slaughterhouse-Five or Cat's Cradle and say, "What should we do? What are we?" And he'd say, "Get off of my lawn."
Yeah,
he was an older guy. Now, it is one thing I'll say about the Beats. He was very close later with Allen Ginsberg.
Okay.
And he and Ginsberg were inaugurated into the rather elitist American Academy of the Arts in 1973 together. These two unwashed people, these countercultural heroes, these figures without conventional pedigrees. And Vonnegut was once asked, how do you feel being inaugurated into the great Academy of the Arts with Allen Ginsberg? And Vonnegut says, this is 1973, he says, if we're not the establishment, who is?
Gregory D. Sumner is my guest and has written an incredible new book on Stuck in Time, A Journey Through Kurt Vonnegut's Life and Novels. You can go to gregdsumner.com and pick up more about this. Great place to start. Another good place, pick up the book, because it talks about this author that has influenced so many of us, or if not influenced, at least we enjoyed him. And there is a difference. And did Vonnegut care about that? Did he want to influence people, or was he satisfied that he perhaps entertained folks?
Oh, I think he wanted to be more than an entertainer, although, you know, he's known for his jokes, for his mordant humor, again, for the sci-fi devices. You know, he was a mechanic. He said, I believe stories and novels can be worked on like Model T Fords. They have to work. He wanted to be kind to the reader. His simplicity, which was often misunderstood by kind of elitist critics, it made it accessible to people, and that's one reason we still read him. But I think what's interesting is it's not kid stuff. I hear so many people say, I used to read Kurt Vonnegut, or, you know, it's something you read in high school or perhaps college. Rereading him in my own middle age now, rereading the course of his books, he's operating at a much deeper level than maybe is apparent on the first go around. He deals with complex issues of mortality, of death, of the absurdity of existence, the relationship between men and women. How do we be kind to each other in an absurd universe? He asks seemingly childish questions in accessible prose. This was sometimes taken as laziness by critics, but I think if you look beneath the surface, much like Mark Twain, it's a very accessible style which kind of smuggles in deep, profound philosophical commentary on the American dream, on the American experience, the tragedies of that, the failures of that, also the promise of that, and the human condition, really.
Some of his novels struck me as more political than others. Like,
definitely.
For instance, I don't have it in front of me. All of a sudden, I'm thinking how much I enjoy. Is it Hocus Pocus or Hocus Focus?
Hocus Pocus,
okay,
yeah.
It is Hocus Pocus.
Yes, yes.
And I was thinking, boy, that's a novel partly about me, because, and maybe you could just quickly summarize it, but had I been born a poor white kid or a poor black kid, yeah, I'd probably be in prison rather than sitting right here, because I had virtually the same experience, and maybe you could kind of counterpose the two elements, but it's across the lake, right? The two.
Right. There's an elitist private college of kind of rich kids on one side of the lake.
Or ne'er-do-wells.
Yes.
Rich ne'er-do-wells. I was not a rich. I was a middle-class ne'er-do-well.
They take courses like science for non-science majors and such like that. And yet on the other side of this lake in Hocus Pocus, which is one of Vonnegut's last novels, 1990, the other side is a very brutal, a very overcrowded maximum security prison for black inmates only. In this future that Vonnegut imagines, the prisons are segregated by race and so forth. And it's a commentary on the class, it's a very contemporary book, even though it came out in 1990. It's about the widening gap between the rich and the poor. Really, I think Vonnegut felt the American dream was being eclipsed by greed, by the class system, which he found unnecessary. You know, Kurt Vonnegut was also, I think he would embrace the idea of socialism. He grew up with it. He knew it rightly. He wasn't a political theorist. He didn't really know how to enact it. He liked Franklin Roosevelt. He liked the New Deal. He felt there should be some way, you know, that we can make things more equitable and reduce the suffering. So Hocus Pocus is a book, I think, of Jailbird in 1979 and going all the way back to God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater, which is a gentler book. But they're all critiques of the American class system, which he thought was undemocratic and was unsustainable and was causing a lot of needless suffering. They're withering. Hocus Pocus is a witheringly funny, dark book. You laugh and you cry at the same time. And I think it showed that he was very and full in charge of his powers right through the end of his writing career. If I could say one thing to Vonnegut readers, read the second half of his career. Read those later books. And Hocus Pocus is a very pungent book. I think you'd agree, Peter.
Well, sure. And just having this conversation with Greg Sumner makes me want to go back and reread some of and check out the ones that, pardon me, that I haven't. I mentioned earlier about Slaughterhouse-Five and what a powerful movie and an impact it had on me, although I had first read the book. And I just all of a sudden had that flash when Billy Pilgrim comes out of this bunker and looks at what Allied bombing had done to the city of Dresden. Essentially, Hiroshima did, except with conventional weapons.
Yes.
With they don't even know how many people dead. Maybe 150,000.
Yeah, the numbers are hard to determine because there are so many refugees.
But what did Kurt Vonnegut have? A lot of times, authors will go, "What did they do to my movie?" What did Kurt Vonnegut think about the portrayal?
Well, this is kind of interesting. And wouldn't you think Slaughterhouse-Five would be a very difficult book to film, as most of Vonnegut's books would be? Interestingly, Vonnegut liked Slaughterhouse-Five. He liked the version of it. He said, "I'm as lucky as Mario Puzo in terms of having a film made from my book."
He thought The Godfather
was good as well. So he's that rare author who thought they did an effective job of conveying what he was trying to do in the film. So he liked Slaughterhouse-Five. There are a couple of later films made in the 90s that he had different feelings about. Mother Night was made into, I think, a very excellent film
with
Nick Nolte as Howard W. Campbell Jr. Highly recommended. Vonnegut liked it. Then later, Nolte participated with Bruce Willis they tried to film and I believe failed, and I think Vonnegut believed failed, with Breakfast of Champions, which is one of my favorite books, the first one I read of Vonnegut, and yet I think it's kind of unfilmable. So those are some later.
Did it come out, though? I mean,
both films came out.
I saw Mother Night.
If I had to be a film critic, I'd say watch Slaughterhouse, watch Mother Night. They're very faithful to the books. Breakfast of Champions is a little bit challenging, you know.
Greg Sumner, we're getting towards the end of this, only a couple minutes more, and there's so much in your book.
Sure.
I'm stuck in time.
I'm making you want to go back and read the books, that's my purpose.
Well, yeah, and one of my purposes here is to urge people to get your book, Unstuck in Time, A Journey Through Kurt Vonnegut's Life and Novels. And it's the kind of thing, too, if you've read the novels, read this, and all of a sudden, probably a lot, because Greg has done a lot of thinking about what all of this means, what the journey was all about, and then reread them again.
Yes.
That's your assignment, class.
Speaking of
class, how do your students, so you're at the University of Detroit, Mercy.
Correct, yes.
And so... Is Vonnegut this faded figure from another era, or are they still reading him?
It's interesting. I think a quarter of the students, if I say how many know the name Kurt Vonnegut, they will raise their hands. They have maybe parents who handed the book to them, books to them. Maybe they're scientifically oriented. But I find that one quarter of young people, and I'm talking 20-year-olds who read Vonnegut, are passionate about him. A 20-year-old female in my class came to me and said she cried when Kurt Vonnegut died on April 11th of 2007. And another student told me a little bit later, and we're talking someone 20, 21 years old, said her boyfriend in Afghanistan in a bunker had a Vonnegut slogan tattooed on his arm from Slaughterhouse-Five: "Everything was beautiful and nothing hurt."
Wow.
So this is something also, Vonnegut's not just for boomers. I find that people from various walks of life read him. He's read around the world. All of his books are in print. And the most encouraging thing to me is that young people are reading Vonnegut. I think he's a writer for the 21st century.
And the book to read through to get a whole sense of this is Unstuck in Time, A Journey Through Kurt Vonnegut's Life and Novels. The author is Gregory D. Sumner. He's been my guest here on the Peter Werby Show. Good place to go, Greg D. Sumner, SUMNER.com. It's published by Seven Stories Press. You might want to take a look at their site as well, because they have terrific books, and I interview a lot of the authors. There'll be links to all of this on my site, Peter Werby, WERBE.com. Greg Sumner, thanks for being my guest.
Thank you, Peter. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio.
Now, stay tuned for more Rip Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
One size does not fit all, especially when you're talking about your mortgage. Introducing the all-new Yourgage from Quicken Loans. Yourgage is better than a traditional mortgage because it conforms to your goals. In fact, it's the only home loan that allows you to custom design your term anywhere between 8 to 30 years. Here's how it works. Let's say you've got 8 years left on your mortgage and you want to refinance to a lower interest rate. The Quicken Loans 8-year fixed Yourgage can help. It keeps your term short and lowers your monthly payment. Just call Quicken Loans at 888-249-1425. The Quicken Loans Yourgage. It's a home loan on your terms. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. Nationwide licensing number 3030. Other restrictions apply. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. Call 888-249-1425. That's 888-249-1425. Is your air conditioning working? Do your carpets need cleaning? Or maybe you're ready to have your house painted. Big or small, whatever your home improvement need. Now it's easy to find the right home pro for your project. Log on to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic is a free online resource with instant access to pre-screened remodelers, roofers, maids, and many other home contractors. Just go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic has a network of licensed and insured contractors in hundreds of home improvement categories. If you need an electrician, plumber, architect, or any other home service, visit fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's easy and it's free, and it's the source to find neighbor-recommended contractors in your area. Now you can hire a pre-screened home pro with confidence. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's quick, it's free, and there's no obligation. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. That's fixitfast.servicemagic.com.
Water is all around us. No wonder it's hard to imagine we're facing a water crisis. But we are. So that's why the American Planning Association brings you simple ways to save water at home and in your community. Learn more at planning.org. That's planning.org. A public service message from this station and the American Planning Association.
There are many debt relief plans and scams out there. So if you find yourself with $10,000 or more in credit card debt, get the facts about legitimate debt relief solutions available to you. Call American Credit Card Solutions for a free informational kit that will tell you about your options in simple, easy-to-understand language. The kit is free, the shipping is free, and the consultation is free. Call now, 800-541-5656. There's no hard sell and no pressure. The free informational kit can be mailed to you today, so you can examine all the debt relief options available with no one pressuring you to make a quick decision. Call 800-541-5656. This is a first-come, first-serve offer, and kits are limited. So call right now for your free debt relief informational kit. Not available in all states. Call 800-541-5656. That's 800-541-5656.
Getting you back to the rock.
Toronto.
I like it.
On the Riff.